November at Palm.
I guess they'll be coming in. I submit them next meeting then.
Okay.
Originally, some of the local issues weren't going to be added, and then as of yesterday, they decided that they were going to be added.
If you give them to me, I'll put them in the minutes.
Okay.
And then then we'll include them in the agenda for next meeting as well. But at least they'll be in the minutes and people can check them if they want.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. And I just thought, it was funny because.
Can you give that to Scott, please?
Oh, it lasted.
Well, they say it.
This is apparently
hashtag. Oh,
look at that.
That's me.
Yes.
Happy belated
thank you,
birthday.
Gary. Yes.
When you pick it up, it
says less fill. Less fill.
Less fill. Less fill.
So it's in the foil.
No, but
it's a cupcake.
Symbol or something. I haven't figured out.
I wonder if she put fingers in here or something.
Yeah.
It's just a black brownie.
Oh, okay.
It's a cupcake.
Oh, a cupcake.
I just didn't know how to keep it in there without it rolling all around.
Good. Oh, cool.
Looks like you figured a good way.
Tim, are you doing any, like, December, January, any road shows for wall projects? I was just doing some
good morning.
Stuff. I thought to myself, I need to get out.
Good morning. This is Derek and Wall Wall.
If there's any Star Wars. Is that sounding like that might, is there anything I could basically tag along with?
And sure.
I just think it'd be tremendous if doing these changes and all the stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than just look at the picture, it'd be super cool.
That was classic.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're out there in December already, so that won't work with AFEP, but I was thinking maybe after that.
One thing. Hey, Derek, you're on the phone.
Yes.
Doug Baus was just asking about a trip out to Walla Walla Projects. When is the Lamprey group touring McNary?
Well, we haven't set a schedule yet, but it should come out pretty soon. It would be mainly in January and February, depending on the latter outing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
But
okay.
If there's somebody you want included on that distribution list, just let me know. And
yeah, can you include Doug Baus, B-A-U-S?
Sure.
And yeah, so that's one for sure. I know there's a tour looking at the Lamprey mods.
Sure. Anything just with these changes and stuff would be super helpful to have the context of the project rather than the cool pictures that are on a wall.
Right.
Granted, they're cool pictures, but something about being out there.
So that's one. I'll keep
maybe
it posted.
I'll send you an email too, just to whatever.
Yeah.
If anything comes to mind.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep, we can do that.
Thanks.
So we can get going. I saw
here.
Good. I saw Tom Lohr's outside, so he should be coming.
That was an hour ago.
Well, he's waiting to be late.
That's right. He was almost on time. In fact, when I saw him, he would have been early. So
is that why you waited till 10?
Yeah. Is Gary coming? Anyone?
He's upstairs.
It is a long way.
It's commute. It's
how was the drive this morning?
Well, I guess you know it's after 10, and let's roll. So, let's see. Review October minutes. Anyone have any changes on Tammy's wonderful minutes from October? Okay. Approved. You all. Does everyone have a copy of the agenda today?
No.
Anyone that need it? So. Okay.
They're separated by yellow.
Gary printed this one this morning. He said he was having trouble with it, too.
Okay. It's a 27-page book.
Oh, wow.
Who else?
Hello. Bill Adler joining.
All right, Bill. We're just getting started. We're passing out agendas right now.
I kind of snuck in. Nobody heard my beep, but I'm Alan Brower with Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission.
Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Well, let's... I guess we'll finish introductions on the phone, and then we'll go around the room so you all know who's here. So we've got... I already heard Derek Fryer, Walla Walla, Bill Hevlin, and...
Alan Brower.
Anyone else on the phone? Okay. I'm Tim Dykstra, Walla Walla District.
Rick Berger, Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Dave Parkson, Oregon Mayor.
Scott Benton, Bonneville Power.
Ann Stevenson, WDFW.
Doug Bouse, Court.
Greg Moody, Corps of Engineers.
Tammy Mackey, Keeper of the Minutes.
Eric Wolfman, BPA.
Robert Stample, Corps.
Sam Scott, Public Power Council.
Rick Markison, Small Market.
John Rarisich, Corps.
Ben Hausman, Corps.
Okay.
And Gary.
Gary Frederick, Snell Fisheries.
Welcome. You have an agenda, Gary?
Yeah.
Okay. So, we just approved October meeting minutes. Okay, Gary?
Yeah, I sent whatever I had in the camera.
Okay. You're okay with that too, Bill?
Yeah.
Okay. Any additions to the agenda? Welcome, Dave. I'll add an update on the lower granite fish trap. So we'll update that when we get there. Welcome, Dave.
Hey.
Do you need an agenda? Or are you?
Let's just change from the one that was there.
They never change.
Okay.
They don't now.
She says it's printable, then that's it.
That's chiseled in stone. So
I will no longer say to print it unless it is indeed printable.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll move into action items then, unless anyone else has anything to add to the agenda. All right. 2.1, Bonneville Spillway Repairs. Yes.
Randy isn't here. We can just postpone okay. That one for right now.
Okay. 2.2, Little Goose, Spillway Weir. This is one we can take off the action item list simply because we have no data on low flow, like when we're down below 30K in the river. So
yeah, I didn't figure you would have, Tim.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll have a fish passage plan change form that we can talk about when we get there. But as far as coming up with, you know, data on fish passage at low flow, it simply doesn't exist. So we can move on to 2.3, lamprey modifications at McNary. Derek Fryer's on the phone. Derek, can you give us an update on that?
Sure. I'm still working on the draft plan to send out. I sent one out previously for a Fitterwig meeting, and based on comments and some revisions that I need to make, that will be coming out in short order. I do have a few updates regarding blocking those orifices. We've added a modification to the contract for the contractor that will actually be cutting the lamprey orifices in those stem walls of the tilting weirs, where they're going to pour some concrete blocks with steel eyelets embedded at the ends so that ropes can be hooked to those. And then we've been running this information past the project at McNary, Brad Eby and others, and they've commented and returned some language to us saying that they think that this is feasible, instead of using, you know, manpower to lift and remove those blocks, there's a service crane that can be used to raise and lower those in and out of position. And some of the language that will go into the evaluation plan will be just a plan to troubleshoot and try pulling in and reinstalling these blocks in March to make sure that it can be done prior to the fish season. Other than that, I don't have a lot to update, other than there will be a revision of this draft plan coming out in the next few days, hopefully by early next week.
Hey, Derek?
Yes?
Will those revisions have some drawings of these blocks and how you plan to deploy them?
Yeah, we can draw up some, or there's a good description of the size and shape. I'm not sure we have pictures of them yet, but I need to get with our hydraulics folks because they're working on the design and then getting that design modification into the contract. So they should have drawings.
Description.
Yeah.
And then, how they're. So you'll stow these on the deck somewhere or next to the fish ladder and.
Yes, and then I've got the size written down here, but I'll get the final dimensions and what they're planning on having this contractor do to form those and have them on site available as they finish cutting the orifices through the stem walls.
So how big are they actually, the blocks?
Well, what they're thinking is I think it's a 48 inch by 4 inch by 8 inch precast. Concrete, and I don't know what this term is, but with lintels or bonded seams with steel eyelets embedded at each end so that you can attach some ropes and then use the a service crane there to raise and lower those into position.
Okay.
And I can include those drawings with the draft
the
draft plan.
Yeah, you would, and then so, I can't remember where we left the discussion on what... how or when we would deploy those, what criteria?
Well, in the plan, it is to basically install those blocks to cover those orifices basically before the ladder's watered up. So they will be blocked initially, and then the plan is to pull them, remove them, once it's watered up, and then a couple of them, and then redeploy them.
Right,
now
I remember
position.
That. And work them on up, and then you'll have them all open. But how about putting them back in? What criteria are we going to use from our observations, from our video, and whatever? I mean, those, I think there's things that are still hanging. At least I don't remember.
Sure.
How we
that
them.
That was one of the major points was to develop the criteria for what do you see with the video monitoring via salmon behavior that would be a call for shutting this operation down.
Right.
And I was coming up with some wording that states fish that are obviously trying to run into these orifices or trying to pass them would be a definite criteria for shutdown. And I haven't got that language all figured out, but that's my plan for the next 2 days is dedicate my time towards.
So you're going to come up with some criteria for redeployment if necessary.
Yes.
And also, we'd want to look at the camera placement that you ultimately come up with,
mm-hmm.
and whether there's any need for lighting or those sort of things. So those are all, I assume, in the next version.
Yes, they are, and then there's some information in there on the cameras we're thinking about using, and they likely won't need light sources.
Okay, yeah.
So that eliminates that problem, but I also have some information in there on some tests that Mary Mosier had done at Bonneville with some lightings at a count station, I believe, using some different lights and lamprey behavior associated with lighting.
Okay.
So in case as a fallback of... if for some reason we decide to go with some different cameras, then and lighting is involved, we have at least some literature background that shows that these red LEDs or the infrareds didn't seem to inhibit lamprey passage.
Or salmon passage.
Okay.
Gary, did you have specific criteria in mind putting blocks back in?
It needs to be discussed. You know, I mean, if it just one fish bangs into the orifice, we're done, or...
I'll develop some draft language, but I'm going to need some help from this group on, you know, what you're really looking for. But I can draft something up, and I didn't have that language in the draft plan originally for the fitter wig. But I'll be working on that on the next couple of days, and then can pass it through you guys and get your input and comment on what you really want to see for the criteria for shutting down those orifices.
We're going to be having a discussion here, I think, sometime either today or early soon about lamprey improvements, how they might affect salmon, and how we anticipate or didn't anticipate that under the biop. And that leads to potential reinitiation of consultation if we exceed take that was anticipated either for adults or juveniles. So, you know, really what it comes down to is we need to maintain the kind of passage and survival for adults that we anticipated we would have in the biop. That's what it boils down to. So,
okay.
Kind of a no harm standard. You know, but what does that mean in terms of individual fish banging into an orifice? If it's once or twice, is that an issue or not? That's tough.
Yeah.
Delay
issue.
Is that something that's delay internal?
Delay probably wouldn't be much of an issue, but it would be a Bonneville where delay could equate directly to death from sea lion predation. But
mm-hmm.
if this would lead to injury of fish that would, you know, cause them not to be able to spawn, ultimately that's an issue too. So we have to make that determination, and I'm not sure, you know, preseason, if we saw a lot of fish hitting it, I'm not sure how to define that. That's a problem. A few, probably not.
Did you want
something that we would say stop?
You could have a trigger of when they want to review it, too. I mean, something like if they start seeing any kind of initiation of orientation on them, then you may want to just review the tapes.
Right.
That way you got ultimate flexibility.
Yeah.
If that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave, and that we talked about that at the Fitterwig, is right. The turnaround time on the video to. Being critical for this project moving forward.
Exactly.
It's a very short turnaround within a couple of days.
Derek, with the cameras, are you going to be able to see, you're only looking at those new orifices, right?
Yes.
So you don't, well, I guess we have a ladder counts. I mean, I'm just trying to think in terms of whether, saying one fish or two fish is probably not right, but saying the percentage of
a percentage of the fish
kind of
based on the daily count.
Yeah. Might be a better...
Yeah.
Approach.
It's gonna be low.
Yeah, it's gonna be low. What is it?
The other things we'll have is we should have a comparison of an open orifice with video monitoring and a closed orifice of video monitoring. So you at least get some sort of comparison between what normal fish behavior is without a lamprey orifice. And so I think that could shed a little bit of light on, you know, if you're seeing something that doesn't quite look right, but you're not quite sure exactly what is going on, you can at least look at a blocked orifice that doesn't have any flow coming through it, and at least get a little bit of comparison on salmon behavior in those locations.
And it depends on the angle of view of your camera, I guess.
Yes, it does, and that's something that I will suggest and work with the fish field unit on previous studies that they've done, The little bit tricky thing here is working with a contractor on getting, you know, what we put down as to actually what goes in place. I don't see it as being a problem, but it's just something to consider as far as when we talk about the location of mounting these cameras, that's actually how they're installed. And so that's just provide, I think that can be handled pretty easily with just very close project oversight when they're down there installing those cameras.
I'm just thinking if these things are blocked only early in the season, then fish density is going to make a big difference on what you see. If everything's open and the density is high, you may see a lot of fish in the proximity of the orifice. That would look very different from earlier in the season,
mm-hmm.
but it shouldn't cause any concern. So I think it's really going to come down to the behavior really of fish in the air, in the vicinity, immediate vicinity of the orifice.
How positive a seal do these blockages create? I mean, if you know, if they're not right up against the wall, there could be substantial leakage. How are you going to determine that they're blocked well?
Do you see fish nosing at it?
Yeah, but if it's supposedly blocked, I mean,
not kidding.
Yeah,
you're not going to be able to.
What?
You're not going to do it very well.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Unless you want to throw in some dye or something like that in there and buy it.
Did you hear that question, though, Derek?
Yeah, I did. That is one of the a tough thing to get at is how well blocked are they? And
you put streamers on the blocks, and if the streamers go through, and then
they start moving.
That won't work because that'll go through anyway.
Yeah.
There's going to be some leakage, but it shouldn't matter.
Does your camera actually look at the orifice? You can see if it's blocked or not.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking was going to be the best indicator is in what I was envisioning is the camera placed so that you can see the downstream and upstream of both of the first weirs that are modified, but looking up into that orifice environment, and so you can see the behavior of the animals right at that slot.
Yeah, so that'll give you your best indication of whether you've blocked it or not.
So I guess I would really like to give Derek some rough outline of a target as far as developing this trigger, rather than just having him wing it and then throw it on a table.
He's a good biologist.
I know, but I mean, can we give him some guidance, like
wrong, wrong.
If we
if we
see visually inspect with the cameras, I'm trying to think of some trigger. 10 instances of a fish, whatever, trying to get through or bonking its nose, then we bring it to F-Palm or something to have a discussion. Because I'm thinking of defining this trigger, it's going to be tricky. And I think probably the way to do it is to give us a loose trigger, but then we get back together and talk.
If any fish approaches those orifices and tries to go through, then we have to have a talk. Any fish. Wow. And my guess is there won't be any fish trying to go through. That's our assumption.
Start with any fish, and then basically from there start saying, okay, start reviewing the tapes more aggressively. If you start seeing more than a couple fish a day,
okay.
Look at the dam counts, take a look at that, and then we'll have to make a decision.
Okay.
I'm guessing none. I don't think there'll be enough attraction that we'll get much. I think that's what our assumption is going into it, is that there really won't be any. And if there are, then the question comes up as to how many, and I don't think any of us can answer that question.
Yeah. You catch
and then
that,
I think it's going to be something, at least in my mind, of what you already mentioned was, intensively monitoring that video and getting a count of the number of fish that may be attempting to stick their nose into there, and then comparing that to the daily counts, and seeing what percentage are we looking at, and then having immediate discussions on that.
Yeah, but what would trigger the discussion should be if you see any fish trying to get through those orifices.
That's what I had planned was, even one fish trying to push his way through that is an indicator that more fish were likely going to try that. So
let's just call it a contact. If a fish contacts the orifice, if you can tell that.
Aggressive
that's,
manner, in a real aggressive type manner.
Well, I don't care about that. I just, if he contacts it,
if he sticks a snout in there, if he just happens to go by there and looks at it, that I'm not
worried about. Yeah.
If he actually contacts the wall.
Exactly. If he contacts it, then let's have a discussion.
Okay.
And then also, did you guys talk about how we talked about, that wall-to-wall fitter with eons ago, talking about, monitoring kind of begin the season. If we don't see anything, you can probably not monitor as aggressively. And then as you start seeing peak numbers, start monitoring again. There's going to be a fish density issue as well, because the more fish you get in it, the more likely you're going to have it.
Yes, I'm working on the language to set it up to base it on the run, the timing of the run, like you said, heavy early monitoring, and then heavy monitoring during the peak of the run, and then also when there's more than one species in the ladder with mixed species and the densities are highest, being a very heavily monitored time period.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you get Shad to wedge themselves in there and get attracted to it, excellent.
Eliminate the need for blocks.
Exactly.
So,
and then I'll mention this one more time, but what I was considering in the plan was just only leaving all the orifices blocked except for the first weir, and pulling those and doing the video observations on those, and then as the season progresses and we're more and more comfortable with these mm-hmm. lamprey orifices operating, then as we're getting closer towards the lamprey run, we would sort of systematically start pulling blocks downstream, working upstream. And so we wouldn't have all the modified weirs operating during the salmon season. And I guess I'd like a little bit of feedback from you if you think that that's an appropriate way to go. I was just thinking of being very conservative with this. And just monitoring that first stem wall and weir that they're going to encounter intensively, and then as things look good, we can start opening up the other orifices and watching them as well.
Yeah, Derek, you're getting all positive head nods here on that. That's
okay.
A good.
No,
I just thought change. Well, I was just waking up.
So that way, if there is a problem, then we're only blocking, have to go in and put concrete blocks over two orifices instead of all of them, and it just makes the process simpler.
Yep, that sounds good.
And I'm thinking if we don't see anything for a while, I mean, I don't know if we need to, like, let's remove one day, wait a couple days, do another one, because we don't think we have any way of monitoring. How many cameras are we putting in?
Well, I was planning on monitoring both the downstream and upstream lamprey orifices on the first modified weir, and then the downstream side of the next two weirs. And so three weirs total.
But how many modified?
There's a plan to modify nine.
No, I'm saying how many modified weirs would we be monitoring at best?
Three.
The downstream three?
So
we're then monitoring four total, because you also said you're going to monitor one that. Oh, you're just going to monitor. Okay, I get you. So you're going
to. Well, upstream one is blocked, we can monitor that to get a relative comparison of what salmon video behavior is compared to an open orifice.
Okay. Hey, Derek, it's Clugston. Have you guys thought, if you're worried about a seal, is there any way you could put some gasket like stuff on the upstream side one so it.
Or a guide.
Pull it down in there?
Something.
Something that would be at least likelier to seal on it. Think about it. Do you have a trigger date for when you're going to want them all open for lamprey?
No, I need to investigate that, and that'll be part of the plan,
gotcha.
The draft plan that comes out. As far as putting a gasket seal, I'll need to talk with. I think that's a good idea. That's not a bad idea at all, that you could actually put on the stem wall itself. That when you put the block down, that it's got something to seal up against. And so, yeah, I will investigate that. That's a very good idea.
So I guess now that we've heard this discussion, I'd like to get a sense of realizing that you don't have the final plan in front of you, but you have the general sense that it's going to have triggers in there that aren't going to be really clearly defined as much as they're going to trigger us to all sit down again and look at things. And we can refine that as we move forward. That's one piece. The second piece, and that's sort of new progressing plan on this. At Fitterwig, I heard two things that needed to happen before we could get a formal approval on this project. It was further refine the monitoring plan, which I believe we've done, although it's not, everything isn't locked in place yet. I think the flexibility is going to be built in to accommodate concerns. And the second thing I heard that was preventing a yes, full-on approval was wanting to know the winter maintenance schedule. So that's a piece that we have it on here later in the agenda, but it just jumped there in a nutshell. And I think Greg actually sent out an email on this, which was we've been able to change the schedule, so we'll have a ladder operating. At all times at McNary. So with those two pieces of information, can we get the concurrence that it's okay to move forward on modifying this ladder? Yes? Okay.
Go forth and cut.
Okay, so if we can just get that in the notes that Tom, Dave, you're okay?
Yep.
Rick, Gary. Okay, BPA. All right, we're all on the same page. We're moving forward. We'll continue to monitor, tweak the monitoring plan, but we're okay to the green light to move forward on this. Okay. Thank you. All right. 2.4. Derek, do you have an update you want to provide on the lamprey velocity test?
Just that we've got the request in with the University of Idaho to give us a draft final report for what we saw this year with salmon passage and lamprey passage utilizing the day counts with those reductions in entrance velocities at McNary. And I haven't seen it yet, but I'm expecting it any time. And I will forward that along to F. Palm as soon as I see it.
Yes.
But the view from verbal communication with Chris Caudill and the University of Idaho and Chuck Boggs is that they're not seeing any differences in salmon passage based on a reduction in flow for those hours that we reduced at night.
Okay.
But I will have a draft final, like a letter report from the University of Idaho coming shortly.
Okay. And so you can send it to me when you get it?
Yes.
And then I'll send it out to you all. Mm-hmm. Okay. 2.5, Little Goose, Lower Granite, fish transport. If you remember last meeting, we just brought to the attention that were really low numbers for transport. However, because of ongoing research and studies, we would have impacted an expensive study, and so we would have saved a few pennies on a truck driving back and forth and impacted a study. So we decided to continue on as we discussed it, as was laid out in the FOP with transport, and so that's where that ended. To finish that, so we did continue transporting through the end of October, like we said we were going to do in the FOP, and transport is now done for the year at the projects.
Is that a multi-year study, or is this the last year of that study?
I don't know for sure.
I'm just thinking of something about the next year.
Multi-year study.
I'm sure it is.
So could we work on criteria that if we don't have a study, right, have it in place?
Well, I think the first question is fine if you're going to have research. Because if you have research next year, it's new anyways.
Well, you have a year before you need it.
The only thing you
might want to have the results of the research, actually.
Yeah, there were two reasons why we decided to continue with transport. One was we were going to impact a study. So that was a big one. The other one is when we talked to the NOAA researchers on that, they also reminded us that the best SARs were for those late season transported fish. And so
we really want to discuss that in depth.
So
I think you may have to. Yeah. We're all six of them.
Forced hockey because it's crappy data.
Don't argue with me.
It's like yesterday with SARs, we don't know how many fish it took to get those SARs. We don't know what it compared to in river because we don't have in river SARs. So we really don't know what the hell those SARs actually mean. But hey, we'll just keep doing it anyways because it's fun.
So who's going to check with the researchers to see if they're doing it next year? Sounds like it's a walk.
I'm trying to capture that.
Yeah. Tom Grant.
You can paraphrase.
Horse Hooey? Is that what you're saying?
We can. You can put down Walla Walla. We'll check into the study, see if it's ongoing for 2010.
Tom expressed concern.
Tom had concerns about the validity of data.
But the reason I bring the SARS thing up is not only to rile up Tom, but also just I don't think it's a no-brainer that if the study isn't occurring, that we'll automatically not transport. I think there's another discussion there, realizing it could be a fun one. So anyway. But we can do the initial check to see if there's a study. And if there's not a study, then I realize that's going to open a can of worms, and we'll have a lively discussion. So we'll wait till then to have that. Cordy is not here.
No, but...
Cordy is here.
Oh, he is.
view the phone.
Great.
This information was sent and included in the October minutes. It's at the very end of the October minutes.
Did anyone else join us on the phone? Was it just Bob that joined?
Just going in.
Okay. So, Bob, can you give us a quick just recap of why you sent that out?
Okay. I assume that Tammy sent quite a few attachments, probably. The main one was the Bureau of Rec PowerPoint presentation. That's kind of what is bringing this up again with the fever muscle tack to it. And if you all have that in front of you, there's a couple pictures in there that really raised the red flag for me. Was the picture of the grating that does not have any kind of coating on it, just a plain steel grating, and what it looks like after 7 months. And the other one was just a list of what Bureau of Rec found for coatings that are anti-fouling. That's what made me raise the question the last time. So what we need to do now is figure out where we left all this off and when we were looking at it before and try to determine what our question is now.
Bob, it's Gary.
Hey,
you
Gary.
Got my email that I sent out last week on this or whenever it was.
Yes.
That seems to me to be a fairly clear path through this. You want me to recap that?
Okay, yeah, go ahead and recap that. For
okay.
One,
okay. I didn't send it to everybody. I think Byrne was on the list as well. So I wanted to get Bob's opinion of it first, but as best as I can remember it all, what I proposed was to determine what the dilution factor is. You guys did a test on the north ladder with full deployment of galvanized gratings, right?
Correct.
And you had...
And that one had some years to it.
Yeah, which is good, because then you're in the middle, you're 5 or 6 years into the life cycle of that coating, which supposedly
right.
would last almost 20 years. So
correct.
That should have been a good time to do the test. You found no zinc in the samples taken from near the entrance to the ladder, which should have the full exposure. That water should have had the full exposure to all the zinc in the ladder. What I proposed was a method of determining the rate of flow versus the square, the area of zinc-coated surface in the ladder. So you're looking at the flow through the ladder and the area of zinc exposed in the ladder and coming up with a ratio. And if that ratio is not exceeded in other ladders, then those ladders are okay to put this stuff in. In other
yep.
words, if there's more flow per surface area of zinc, just deploy. No questions asked. If it's in a narrow band where it's maybe actually the concentration or the surface area of zinc is a little higher than the amount of flow in the north ladder, then we might deploy anyway if that was fairly close ratio and then test
uh-huh.
at the exits in those ladders to see, because I realize it's a very conservative, if it's zero, you know, detection, zero, that's pretty conservative. So we don't really know where the limit is in terms of exposure of zinc to the dilution factor of the ladder.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me that north ladder may be very similar in terms of AWS and ladder flow to the area of zinc exposed
mm-hmm.
as to these other systems in the river. So that, you know, what I asked was that the project or somebody, you know, at the Dalles there take a look at that ratio and determine the flow around the time of the sampling when it occurred, what those ratios were of exposed zinc to flow.
Okay. Yeah, and I've asked our engineers to look into that to see if there's just a magic formula on
yeah.
how we can figure out that exposed area on the grating. And there were two other, we had three sets of samples taken from the field, and the two of the sets one included the north ladder, like we were talking about. The others included the east ladder, the lower part of the east ladder, where we had very new grading put in there. It was only a few months old when we did the testing. And those were just small sections of grading. It wasn't the entire floor like the north was. And then the third set of samples was just a test piece of grading, just to see if we get, because our concern was, are we getting close enough to the grading to get these samples? Because we're just pretty much pulling off the surface and down from the grading, assuming that we got thoroughly mixed water. So we put in a piece of grading in between the picket, the ladder, just hung it there, and then we just did set like 2-4, I can't remember, it was 2-4, 8 feet at various times after we put it in, just to see if we could detect anything coming off the grating inside the ladder, and we could not. So, and that was at the 0.01 threshold or detection.
Right.
So that's where we're at on the field testing. And so at this point then, are you saying that once we get this formula in place and we've determined, all right, this is the ratio that is acceptable, then we just move forward?
Yeah. I mean, you've shown me that the north ladder has no detectable zinc at the entrance, which is what I'm concerned about.
Okay.
And I'm not worried about, right? You've also shown that you can detect zinc off these gratings if you just run water through them, so we know
it's
detectable. It's just that the dilution factor is so high, and you've said this all along, so let's and you've shown it for the north ladder. I'm satisfied with that. It's already been deployed there, so let's take that deployment and the ratio of zinc to dilution flow, really, and apply that on up the river or anywhere. And, you know, just before you deploy, you look at the surface area versus the AWS and ladder flow combination, the total flow in the ladder,
and
compare it to that ratio. And if you're below it, which I think a lot of them probably would be, then you're good to go.
Okay.
And if you're in the ballpark, we probably do it anyway and just call it a test.
Now, another thought: if there's anyone that has any more doubts on this, another thought might be to try to figure out adult radio telemetry, kind of block testing at an entrance with it to see if there's any reaction with fish approaching and rejecting an entrance. That's a possibility too.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. We're doing a test in the North Ladder next year.
Doing a test in the North Ladder for what?
For passage. I mean, where the dalles is the primary sort of, or the primary concern for fish passage, adult passage.
Yeah, my thought is just to take a...
No, I wouldn't.
Take an entrance like the Dalles West entrance, which pulls about 10% of your 10 to 20% of your fish at best, and have it wired such that you put in drop-in grading. You wouldn't install it. You just drop it in and see if you get...
No, I don't want to go down that road.
Higher.
Okay.
No need for it.
So I guess on this, Gary, do you feel like your write-up is... Do you want to get more feedback before that was sent out to all of FPOM? Do you want Bob...
I just wanted Bob to take a look at it and see what he thought before I sent it out to folks.
Bob, can you take a look at that just to make sure that it you're understanding what's being proposed? And if you're okay with it, let Gary know, and then you can...
We can
send that out to the FOM.
The way I see this going is that we're saying North Ladder is good and it appears to be good.
Mm-hmm.
What I was always concerned about is that if we put a bunch more grading in a different ladder with a lot less flow, mm-hmm. that the dilution would be different. So what you would do, I think, is you'd look at that ratio for the North Ladder, zinc to flow, dilution flow, and you'd just look at what that would be for all the other ladders up the system that we're trying to put these gratings in for, and if it looks like the North Ladder is comparable or maybe even less dilute than those, then this issue is gone.
Okay.
Completely.
Okay.
If it's real close.
I'm looking at your response right now, Gary, and it looks good to me.
Yeah, I think this is an easy way out of this whole issue, and it just follows what you guys have been trying to show us. And all I'm saying is that if the ratio isn't the same or doesn't imply that the dilution is the same in another ladder, if it's really close, and that'd be a ladder we test. We'd go ahead and deploy all the and test it. And see what you get. It'd probably be okay.
Now, that sounds very reasonable to me. And so if we, Bob, once you've had a chance to look at it, which it sounds like you're looking at it now, sound okay with it, just finalize that and get back to Gary. And then if you can share that so that we can just keep that part of F-Palm so that we're able to track
it. Bob, if you're okay with it, I'll just send the idea out.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. We'll just come up with... come up with some formulas, and we'll present that to F-Palm.
Okay.
Dave?
So, Bob, Dave Wills, I don't have the report with me. Didn't bring it. I don't remember if you even took samples for pH or if you did and didn't report them, but I think that would be important for the historical record to take the pH and put it with these tests.
Okay.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? I thought I saw pH.
We didn't. No, we didn't pH that, but, I mean, that was part of the whole broad picture, you know, we were trying to look at pH.
Yeah, your write-up had pH in it. I guess maybe it wasn't with the samples.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure it was there.
They did a full water quality report, so it's in the water quality report. It's just not been reported.
Hey, Bob, this is Cluxton. You may want to talk to Schlenker. I think he did that surface area calculation for the gradient in that ladder.
He did, and I think I included that in the F-POM package for today. And,
so you should be able to figure
one
ratio.
One thing on that, though, is he calculated ladder flow. And so when you're talking, that's, you know, that's talking without AWS input.
Right, yeah,
so
and
we were with that. We were real close to that threshold of 0.026.
Okay.
But,
Yeah, no, I think it's the entire ladder flow that's important.
Or at least doesn't match up with the tests that they did. Find out what the operations were when they took the samples.
Well, that's important.
See what the ratio is.
Because we're basing everything on those tests that you took at the north ladder.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm basing what I'm saying, you didn't have any detectable zinc in any of your samples, so.
Yep.
Right. And as a follow-up, too, when we get around to actually accepting it and then proceeding with putting in the zinc that we have in stock, the zinc grading we have in stock, we'll follow up with some more field
samples
as we go.
Yeah.
This is precautionary.
Okay.
Rick, so your samples, they were at the entrance?
We did four-bay tailwater and then also entrance.
Okay, well, the measurements represent the entrance, you know, the attraction conditions, which would affect their acceptance of that entrance. Is that what you're looking at?
Mm-hmm.
So right.
What about the ladder flow itself? If it has a high enough concentration, could that affect their behavior inside the ladder?
Inside the ladder? Well, these gratings are all the way down through the system. Aren't most of the gratings in the lower part?
There, the vast majority is in the lower part.
So that's with the full benefit of all the flows. So.
Yeah.
I think that the exit makes the most, or the entrance area makes the most sense, just inside the entrance. And then another one at the exit, so you have a background zinc level, which is typically zero.
Yeah.
So. Those two make the most sense. Otherwise, I think we'll just chase our tails. And then, of course, radio tracking results, if the fish are moving through it, that's all we're concerned about.
Right. Okay, sounds good. So we have an action item for Gary to send that write-up out. Okay. Okay. Bonneville AFF minutes.
Done.
We're done. Okay.
Meeting set for after F-POM. Yeah. And the next three are covered later on in the agenda.
Okay. 2.8, Bonneville fish jumping at pit tag detectors. Do you know who's covering this, Tina?
It's covered under 50.
Okay.
And Hausman and Marisich are here.
All right. We'll cover that when we get to it.
11 and 12 are also covered later on. Or 9 and
10. 9 and 10. Okay.
Mine has 11 and 12 now.
We are...
No, we just had two new action items, so mine that I'm looking at.
Okay. So, 2.9 winter maintenance schedule. We'll just talk about that now since we're...
It's covered under updates.
I want to talk about it now.
In fact, just move to updates.
Let's go to updates.
You want the third time.
You want a cupcake at it? You're in the perfect backhand position there.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. We are moving on to updates. Bonneville. Fish unit. Trash rake. Update on test. Who's giving this one?
We'll start it and then turn it over to Bonneville.
So, we're going
to
test it in
2004. So, yeah, someday we'll test this thing. Testing on a Friday is problematic for the project, so we'll have to.
The day before Thanksgiving, whatever it is.
Oh, that's the day after Thanksgiving.
The day after
Thanksgiving.
Can you guys work on that? So, these two
you guys
can.
Don't work on
talk.
The day before Thanksgiving or the day after or a day after.
Crazy.
That must be nice.
It is a holiday week, isn't it?
Week?
We should probably try and get the... they did rake F2 a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago. It was in the weekly report. And I don't know if they raked it with that or not. Do you guys know?
No. We're waiting on the district engineer for his availability.
Okay.
Why? I thought that we were just going to test it to see if it even worked.
Some people wanted to be present during that testing.
Well, then how about you guys just have the riggers set a day and everybody can show up for it so that we can at least get it tested one way or another.
Can
a normal work day.
Should I bring my drill?
Nice drill more bigger. Holes in there, yeah.
So, when do you think this is going to occur? 2011?
I think it's 12.
It's the end of the. It's supposed to be the apocalypse anyway, so by the time we should be testing, this is my new theory.
We put it off.
December 20th?
Is that
what you want?
20 years.
Isn't that it?
Pick a day.
December 20th, 2012?
Yeah. Mayan calendar?
Yeah. We'll try to get it done before the end of the year. This year. Before 2010. I wouldn't
we'll
recommend it.
Let's put it this way. Just do it. Take some video.
Yeah.
The video tells us the odds of anybody able to be there. They're pretty slim.
Yeah, so instead of waiting for a district engineer, which is the excuse that we've been using for years now,
it's nice.
We can just schedule a test and video it if nobody can show up.
YouTube.
So I don't know what you're going to video.
It would have to be an ROV.
But and even if they're there, they're not going to see anything underwater.
That's why
we're trying to use ROV.
You want to use ROV? So you're going to have coverage in this wondrous event. 25th of December.
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve? Yeah, that's
probably.
That's a Friday. They don't work on Friday.
All right.
So Ben, or John, do you want to schedule that and then just let us know when you schedule it?
Sure.
So you guys are at the mercy of the district, it sounds like.
No, the district can be at the mercy of the project. They just need to schedule it and say, this is when we're doing it. You will either be here or you won't. And we're done with it. Well, Jesus.
Well,
I know you're tired of it. Oh, I'm tired of it already.
Is it that you guys want your best memorial engineers there for some kind of
no, they don't want to be there.
They just want to be there.
Yeah, we told them how it works. Goes down, disappears, you don't see it, it comes up with nothing. But I don't know what they believe us.
It comes up with a lot of bucket of water. But
right.
Come up
we don't know what happens in between. That's the TRP's mystery.
Take a video and then just send it out to folks.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Just do
it. I do. Okay.
Okay. F. Palm says just do it. All right. 3.2, Bonneville Tie Crane. Tammy.
I do not have an update on
that.
Hey, you?
Scheduled today, and it turns out that the final inspection on the paint is going to occur tomorrow. And if that inspection goes well, it'll be shipped out on Monday to the project, and then we'll go back to the factory. They
take
it out
from vaulting, hammering, black paint.
We need to vent all the other things in between. Testing of the boom will occur on Monday the 30th to Wednesday, December 2nd.
Point here.
Oh, don't be so
optimistic. So you're saying by January next year we could actually have a tie crane?
Yeah, maybe.
That's how I figured. Is that November 30th?
This November 30th this year?
Yeah. Between the 30th and the 2nd, it's scheduled for testing.
So what are the odds that paint inspection will be okay on Friday the 13th?
They're having a pool at the office right now. Do you know that?
So what are the odds we'll have Windmill 11 running so we can actually get a test of the ties?
That's a zero.
Yeah. So I mean, take all the time you want.
Yeah.
You want another year? Go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, it is valuable for stream cleaning. So it does have a. I wouldn't let them see that in the minutes.
Yeah,
they'll do it.
But would that take as much time as we need?
Yeah.
Unless you have to use screens.
Take all the time you need between now and November 30th.
Actually, are there any ties left to deploy? Or the last ones I saw were rusting rapidly.
There's still a skin on them.
A little left, little metal mirror. Left in there. You'll pick metal them up mirror. And they'll just crumble like a chunk of tinfoil.
Okay.
Mine.
Have we heard enough about tie crane paint? All right. 3.3 Bonneville fish jumping vertical slot pit tag detectors.
That I think is resolved. Adding this for the off places that we can.
Oh, that's
a simple okay. I should have brought some back in, hopefully. I think with our high forebay, we're getting some water going over.
That's the issue.
17 there.
Yep.
I don't think
that's the issue.
We didn't see any jumping. I mean, I don't know if you guys have, but we've seen zero jumping. It might have been if we had start till mid-October, later, fish months from now. They might have been jumping in September, but we didn't see any jumping, any going over the. We saw splashing, you know, but we didn't even see any fish poking.
Was there water going over the weir?
At some level, it probably is. We were always out there at like 76, 5, a little bit higher than that. I'm thinking at 77, 77.5, yeah, you're overtopping some of the tiers.
Did you look the way?
I did.
I didn't personally do
you. Yeah, they were out there when I was 78.
Did you see fish jumping at that point?
No. I mean, I could see why they might be tempted to.
Yeah.
The upper weirs they were going over was basically, you know, giving them a shortcut instead of going around.
Yeah.
Didn't see it, but I could imagine it happening.
I guess the question, I think that's kind of why they're doing it. I don't really like the idea of just having netting out there. What we need to do is stop the water from going over the weir if we're going to run at those higher levels.
It's only a problem up at the uppermost, and I think we could put something there. It's a pretty small gap to place.
It looked like that was still have something up there today, and I thought that wouldn't take much.
I don't know how long we're going to have that kind of four day.
Yeah,
three more.
Its velocity up there is, I don't know what it is, but it sure seems rapid.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess I would recommend actually putting some plating in there if you have the opportunity to do that.
Or we have a soft constraint that we don't go over that. And that's not so much for the winter. It's probably not, you know, not the big deal, but this is part of the operating range of the project. Right?
Rarely used, but yeah. Ken.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for whatever, I see some change forms in here about height, you know, this sort of situation. So if it happens, then we just found a problem that ought to be fixed. Long term, without nets.
Yeah,
we're going to take the nets out of there and get rid of that, because that's just going to be a maintenance thing. If you put a piece of angle of iron or angle of aluminum or something in there on the wall and then pop that weir. That would be problem solved forever.
Further down on the agenda is another discussion of the high forebay, if Lori Ebner shows up, but there are further issues with the higher forebay rather than just this one that will need to be addressed.
Well, yeah, that's the other way to address it, is not to go there and have a soft constraint or a hard constraint.
It's for the wall right now.
I know.
There we go, up there, but it is possible to do.
I thought it was for Chum right now.
The
high forebay was for the chum.
It can't be used for
well. Have the flows for the chum.
No,
they don't have to be
at
78 for the wall.
I'm not sure why it gets that high point.
They don't need 78 for the wall at all, according to what I saw.
And they're not grounding anything.
So. Because of discharge. There's two functions that serve that. Last year it was just the forebay. This year it's discharge and forebay. So the discharge from high enough to allow me to tell what they need at the job site. And we don't have to hold the forebay as high. If we need to store it for chum, then we can't. It is still possible.
Well, then we need to cover the bases. That's reasonable. That's all. A scrap iron.
Take it off the ties.
I don't think there's any that thick left.
You may want to do it. I suggest discussing with Tagus for the interviews and metal.
Oh, yeah, we can't just put metal plating in there.
No, in case it interferes.
Yeah, piece of fiberglass.
But just, you may want to, whatever design comes up, we can make sure you take the metals, obviously.
Piece of canvas. So can we move on to the next one now?
Please.
All right. TDG.
Byrne wanted this back on here, and then, of course, he didn't show up this month, but we'll just carry this over to Mexico.
Not cool.
Warm.
We
get sunburned.
Yeah. All right.
You can put that in notes.
3.5, Bonneville Amberson section in water work.
So the Amberson team, you'll recall that last month they came and talked about shutting off the entire south end of Powerhouse 1 so that they could have a barge in front of FV11. They have decided not to allow any barge work for the filling of the Amberson section, so there shouldn't be any concerns at this point.
Amberson section?
The north wall of the old map block.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Why'd you say more map block?
Because it's called the Amberson section.
I don't even remember that.
Well, now you will.
All right.
Amberson section.
3.6, the Dalles fish unit outage. Anything more?
I just took an hour, just an update on it, because I had sent out the notification form rather than a coordination form on this one, so thought maybe you'd want an update on how it went. How'd it go, Cordy? Anyhow, the work only took an hour, and they got it done. What they need to do, they got the tail done. So that's all there is. All right.
Okay. Walla Walla winter maintenance schedule. Greg, anything on that?
Nary modifications. There's a change of dates of the Washington Shore ladder being out. We had a conflicting plan earlier this month. We worked through it with the project, and they came back with the 7th to the 14th, the week, 1 week out this year, December. So it would not impact screen removal, interior stuff, and lamprey modification starting the month after that. So that's the only change that we have right now on it.
There is one update on this date. The plan was, I mean, it's been difficult to do a lot of rearranging of schedules on the fly here, but we're trying to do that to have one ladder open up McNary at all times. And so, looked like the 7th to 14th was going to be fine. We're going to have a dive crew on. The problem is, in coordinating schedules, the project now realizes that dive crew that they were planning to have on site is the same dive crew that's planning to be up at Lower Granite to do the RSW dive. So, what that leaves us is, I mean, this is changing by the minute. We're trying to find another dive team that can come in so that we can keep that week of December 7th to the 14th. That could be difficult. If we don't have a dive team there, our option is either to try to do it the week earlier, December 1, but there's a problem with that because we need to have the Washington Fishway exit bulkhead seals installed, and those aren't going to be installed until the 7th. So we can't push it forward. So then the other, if we can't get a dive crew on hand, I guess our best option is to hold that week, the 7th through the 14th, and hope we can get the logs out of the water. Probably can, and if we can do that, then the other limitation is we'd have to do a grading inspection with an underwater camera. And so, no, there's, I think it's workable. There's a little, you know, there's a chance we won't be able to get the logs out of the water. And so we're trying to get a dive team on. My preference would be, rather than blow this up and start over again, I would rather just keep the week of the December 7th to the 14th and do a underwater camera inspection of the graves.
You have problems. You see grading problems.
Yeah. Then we'll have to get divers. So, and
fix the gradings if we have to fix the gradings.
So, well, that's sort of the plan right now. If everyone's okay with that, keeping the 7th through the 14th, we learn, and then.
Do we have December up?
What's that?
Do we have a December up?
Yes.
So if it's the 8th, it says on here, you might want to give an update, and then we can see if we have to do something different.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't care any time of the month. It's
not. Okay.
Do it.
Yeah.
And then I'll
just
it.
Yeah. Okay.
Even if it overlaps the Oregon shoreline.
I don't care even if it overlaps the Oregon shoreline by a few days. That's not. And right. What I'm more worried about really is the February, the late February time frame.
Right.
You know, I've raised that. I don't know if I said that to Greg. You said to me. Email or not, but that's when, if you look at the Perry Boggs, Kiefer, whoever it was, Kiefer, I think, paper, you see that winter steel or the summer steelhead overwintering start to move in that late February, early March time frame. So that last week of February, we could be delaying fish that are trying to get up the system. And even with the north ladder on and running, it's not the best ladder for passage at all. So.
Yeah.
And now that worries me. That's kind of a long range worry, but. And I realize that if you just have the north ladder on, that you'd probably need a spill on that side of the river to attract fish over to it, which is not something you really want to do. So,
okay.
But it is a concern, so, you know, and I'm really worried about where we're going with kelts, too, so steelhead general would make. Is a concern for mine, and we may be looking for offsets. We can't get a kelp facility working. We may need better passage of the fish that are trapped up the river. So that's what that means is kind of the shortening of the winter maintenance season for you guys. I know that's a
boy. That's a big concern.
That'll pull out your Darth Vader.
Pass the cup.
The Emperor.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll. On this particular issue, we'll try to hold the week of the 7th to the 14th, give you an update in December on where we're at. Okay, you know, there's really no update on the fish pumps. Everything's the same as last time when I talked to you about this, which is the water system is what it is. They continue to troubleshoot it and try to identify problems, but it's not something that's going to go away overnight. This is something that's going to be a long-term problem that we're looking at. I don't think the fish implications of this are, there's safeguards that are now in place that I don't see this having fish implications. So it's just implications of primarily for the potable water system that obviously we care about it, but it doesn't really rise to the level of concern to this group. And safeguards are in place so that it doesn't impact fish pump operations or not. Okay. Just the quick 3.9, I already told you, transport is done for the season. And last one, 3.10, is kind of a update slash... I added them.
Oh, okay.
An update slash topic, which is lower granite fish trap. The update part of it is we are planning to do what we communicated last FPOM, which is at lower granite. Let's see, Monday, November 16 is the day we're going to stage for replacing the butterfly valve. The 17th is the day that the valve is supposed to be installed. And Wednesday the 18th is the day that
everything breaks.
Everything. We're going to test to see if installing that valve fixed anything. Okay. There is, as I was driving over here, I was getting some more information on this, which is why it wasn't on the agenda. But I think there is a couple things that I wanted to bring up. One is, you know, there are more fish in the lower Grand's ladder than are normal for this time of year. It's obviously a record return at lower granite. And so I guess I wanted to let you know of a couple safeguards that I wanted to build into this. The first is I think it would make sense if we shut the fish pumps off, so we stop attracting fish to the ladder probably at like 10 a.m. on the Monday. Because what we don't want to do is go to dewater this thing and have a lot of fish in the ladder. And so I'm trying, you know, I talked to Mike Halter out of the project, and he would prefer to shut those fish pumps off 2 days before.
I don't know if I go quite that far. I might do that night before. Might make a little more sense.
What's the transit time?
I think normally we shut the pumps off before we do a dewatering at least the night before, if not the afternoon.
What I was thinking was, if we have the pumps on until about 10 a.m. on Monday, then we get most of the fish that are going to be attracted into the ladder are in there, and we shut off the pumps around 10 a.m. so that we're not continuing to attract more fish up the ladder. So that's one.
What's in the ladder?
Steelhead.
Yeah.
Very few. The most updated numbers from November 6th, so that's the last day, was 5 adults and 20 jacks for Chinook. But
those give a lot up, down, count there.
What?
Give a lot up and down, count there. How much are they really moving versus?
Yeah, I'm.
The Chinook?
Yeah.
That would worry about Steelhead.
Yeah.
Just deal. But Steelhead would be up down anyway. So
right.
It's just Chinook that I'd be worried about.
Right. But it's the.
Dewater handling.
Dewater handling of...
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as the delay of fish by shutting down the AWS a day earlier...
Yeah, I'd almost rather shut it down like the night before so you have the fewest fish you have to handle. So that's what I'm more worried about.
Absolutely.
The night before Monday?
Yeah.
So like Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night at like,
okay.
I don't know, 10?
Yeah.
A couple hours after dark, something around then. Shut it off to try to get kind of as few fish you have in the ladder. That's going to be your biggest problem this time of year is basically having to dewater and pull them out of the ladder.
Indeed.
Exactly.
And also it's going to make your biologist that much more grumpy having that cold water fishing out fish.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Is everyone okay with shutting the fish pumps off then around the night, Sunday? Like, I'll talk to the project right now. We'll say 10 p.m. on Sunday. But if we can build in a couple hours flexibility based on schedules.
I don't see a big issue when I'm going one way or the
other. Bill, are you okay with that? Okay, so that's part one of sort of the contingency plan that I want to have in place. The second part is just and it's hard to define this, but if the project biologist is just really uncomfortable as he starts looking and there's just hundreds of fish in the ladder, yeah. Abort the mission, water back up, and do it later. So I think that's just a smart plan to have in place.
The problem is this, when's it going to change? I mean, to do it later, when's it going to be different?
You have to go into, I guess, the maintenance season.
I mean, generally they do this maintenance
Well, there's a what you might do is actually back off your AWS flow and force the fish to move out on their own. That wouldn't just water up to. I mean, Rick's right. I mean, you may never if these fish start holding in there for wintering, they may never leave unless you give them some signs that it's not the best place to be.
Yeah.
And so, rather than handling them all, at some point you're forgetting the maintenance altogether. You may be better off by backing off to have the ladder flow and orifice flow and getting them back out of the system. And that might take a few days.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, the question is, I mean, does anyone have a feel? From the counters, are they seeing a lot of up down? Are the fish seeming to be holding and residualizing? Or are they still actively migrating through? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, they're not migrating through.
Yeah, they're not migrating through. I don't know if it's got cold enough they decided that this is their overwintering place or.
They're going to be sitting. No, they'll be sitting. Still.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about too.
Yeah.
So you may take a while. You may have to entice them out before the key here is not to have to handle them.
So. Right. Yeah. So I guess it still goes. I'm sensing agreement on the fact that if the project bio just feels like this is going to be an overwhelming and putting fish at risk, we just
go to a plan B.
Go to a plan B.
Yeah, but I wouldn't just go back to normal operations and then try it again 2 days later. I don't know if that's going to gain you much.
I don't think so.
No, if you're still residualizing, your
plan B may be to go to orifice flow for a while and just try to back them out.
Okay.
Down enough to see if there's a problem with a lot of fish in there. You know, as soon as you bring it back up, a large chunk of those are going to move out one way or another anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And then they all come in.
So try it the next day and have light.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll do that. We'll shut the fish pumps off Sunday evening.
Check it out. I hope there's not a bunch of fish.
Check it out. And, you know, the one place is at that. There's a corner pool, what Mike was saying, generally you can get a good sense. That's a good indicator of how many fish are in the ladder based on how many fish are in that corner pool. And so, you know, the goal is to abort this if we see a lot of fish. And I think that the fish in the corner pool, if it's just overwhelmed with fish, that's probably going to be the trigger for us to. Yeah, and we'll build that in for him to make that call. Yep. Okay. Good.
Jim?
Yeah.
Our person up there running the trap now, what's his name?
Darren Ogden.
Darren, yeah. Will he be involved in this?
He's been involved as far as coordinating emails that we've been sending back and forth.
Yeah.
So, yes, he's very aware of it. I can't tell you for sure what his plan is on that day, but I know he's very aware of it because it impacts. Dewater, when the trap's going to be winterized and all that. So
keep him in the loop with all the emails and stuff, and then he'll have to make a decision to be there that day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's very in the loop on this.
Okay.
Okay. Great. And so you're okay with that plan, Bill?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on to agenda item 4. Which is the Smith Root Study Proposal. Who's here to talk
about...
Behind you,
Joe.
Great.
Matt Mace is on the phone.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, great.
And John Parkin is here with me, our engineer.
Okay. So is this a discussion that you think as far as the presentation and the your part in kind of rolling out new information... Can we limit that to 15
yes.
minutes?
Oh, yeah. I don't anticipate. It's up to you guys. I mean, how long this goes.
Okay.
But, I've got the 14 handouts here that are essentially updates to what we presented in August. So I'd like to pass this around the room. And as some of you will recall, I presented a PowerPoint, and we gave you guys copies of the proposal passed through the Corps of Engineers on the upstream migrant transport channel study. We summarized some of the past research that has occurred on the sea lion deterrence array, which is the point of this, is to take that those previous studies and that were done in relatively static water conditions in hatchery environments and essentially repeat those studies in the UMT in velocities up to 3 feet per second with actively migrating fish. One of the points you raised at the August meeting was you encouraged us to do further tests on the DITSIM. Matt Mesa was able to test Smith Root's long-range DITSIM several weeks ago, and last Friday, November 6th, I invited the principal of Sound Metrics, Bill Hanau, to come down. This is the company, of course, that conceived, designed, and who sells the DITSIM products, and so we were able to test the short-range version. He was able to tweak the frequency, and he was able to use a concentrator lens. And I thought we had very good resolution, and so did Bill. I guess Matt is the only one who can talk about a comparison between the earlier tests and the tests last Friday. But the point is we did complete some dips in work, and I think it clearly shows that we need to install and permanently or mount in the UMT during for the length of the study a Ditson unit to capture fish behavior. We also have an opportunity, if we want, to use a new smolt counter. It's a hydroacoustic product that was designed for a consulting firm up in Anchorage as a prototype last year. It worked so well that they've just ordered 32 more of these units. They're small. And they're used in a lot of rivers for smolt counting, but as a backup, they could be used as a way to enumerate fish that enter the array and leave the array. So as I think all of you know, we're talking about a very low intensity electric field. We were able to successfully deter sea lions, even with food present, at a level that did not affect steelhead or lamprey. We were able to do tests on sturgeon to show that they were successfully cleared from the field using our soft start technology, which gradually ramps up the intensity of the field. It's only on twice in any given second at the times when it pulses. It uses a frequency of 2 pulses per second. When you go out and do electrofishing, you're using way higher frequencies of 30 to 60 hertz or pulses per second. Pulse frequency is the driver of injury to fish, and so we're using only 2 hertz in this field. So the concept here is to take what we learned in static environments in hatcheries, repeat those at the same ranges, and repeat that study in the UMT under flowing water conditions for fish that are on active upstream spawning migrations. Matt, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, the only thing that I could add was a little bit of info on the Ditson test. As Carl mentioned, we tested the long-range Ditson a couple of weeks ago, and then Friday did the short-range test. With Bill coming down there, we tried a couple of different lenses, a couple of different concentrators on the Ditson device, and, you know, he definitely improved the images that we were getting a couple of weeks prior to that. So the potential for Ditson to see these fish doing what they're doing is greater now than it was a couple of weeks ago. This guy, you know, clearly knew what he was doing, and so, you know, that's kind of a little brief update there.
And we, of course, have been busy resurrecting the frame structure. John Parkin, our engineer, is here if there are questions about it. It's fiber-reinforced plastic. It's 40 feet in total length, 4 10-foot sections. The electric field portion would encompass the middle 2 10-foot sections. The Corps of Engineers has offered to reduce the flows in the UMT starting December 1. I've heard estimates of there being 2-3 feet of water left in the structure when we do the install on the 2nd. We're looking at man buckets and so forth. We have yet to have meetings with Ben and Tammy and some of the core folks to go over the safety plans and all of those details. But we will be ready to install this thing on the 2nd. And certainly having Matt do the research, I think is a strong point. But we would encourage anyone from any agency, any permitter, any scientist who wants to be there during these studies to please come, please take part, please watch. Matt and I have had discussions. Mr. Didson, if we see fish backing up, I mean, it's a simple matter to turn this thing off. The other question that came up was about the pit tag system. We are going to do some tests before any fish are studied to ascertain that we're not affecting the pit tag detection systems with our electric field. And, of course, we can use parasitic electrodes to confine the field to only that 20-foot length in the UMT. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but since the Didson shows more promise, I don't think you're talking about using any additional pit tag detectors. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the comments we got back from Patagas is you guys saw the study plan that we put together. We originally had flat plate detectors in there, but since writing that, we've discussed the issue with Biomark and with Earl Prentice. And along with the comments from Patagas, I think it's become very clear that we are not going to be installing any kind of pit tag detectors within that UMT. Right. So that has now been taken off the table for now.
And we don't think we're going to have any effect on it. We can't simply run up there with one of our pulsers, turn it on right now. It's really the field in the water. If there's going to be any effect, it's going to come from the field. But we do feel that with a 2 hertz system at only 40 amps, we don't think we're going to affect it, but we have agreed to do a thorough test while the pit tag detectors are on to determine if there's any chance of our electronics interfering with that signal. Gary, you had
what
a question.
What you're talking about is the detectors for the adult in the ladder further out.
Yes,
right?
Exactly, which are about 80 feet away from us, I believe.
Were you also talking about using pit tag detectors in some way to evaluate fish passage?
No, Matt just mentioned. Initially, he was wanting to do that, but since the Didson has now shown us greater promise, and
yeah,
since
I
there
didn't
is
see how pit would work anyway, so
yeah, well,
that's fine.
Since there is that concern about Matt's different detectors possibly affecting the existing detectors, Matt's dropped it from the study.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how it would work anyway. Okay.
Yeah, we were told that it probably wouldn't work very well,
yeah,
because of the rebar and the concrete and that kind of stuff. So the systems would have to be shielded, which would make them, let's say, not as streamlined. So they'd be like window antennas, so they would definitely interrupt some of the current stuff there.
It wouldn't tell you much about behavior anyway, other than presence or absence. So,
Well, actually, if they were set up correctly, they could tell us a lot about behavior with strategically located detectors in multiple arrays. It would have been a nice backup system to see when fish passed point A, when they passed point B, whether they turned around and went back to point A again, and so on and so forth. That's information that we always thought we would get from the Didson, but just in case, we wanted to have a pit tag backup there, which we thought would be pretty useful. But
yeah,
anyway, it's off the table.
I guess what I'm concerned about is the actual behavior of the fish as they enter the field. I guess that might, if you had plenty of them in there, detectors, but you'd have to have some space on those. So
right.
So we're down to the Didson, and we do have to make sure the Didson gives us enough resolution and in the area of the field to see fish behavior. Do they respond or not? And, you know, I'm not worried about fish falling clear out. I mean, that would be a really bad situation. What I'm worried about is fish even hesitating a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that, you know, because hesitation in the tail race of the area of that dam is probably death. So we want to make sure that fish just move on through.
Right.
And that brings me to a question of the how you're going to test them, the dose, I guess, of the electrical field. You've got several in the proposal, which I have somewhere
right
around here.
We're going to essentially replicate the steelhead study that Matt conducted on the college.
You've got seven. Were there any responses from the steelhead in these doses
Yes.
that you're showing here?
Matt, you want to address that?
Yeah, there were some responses of the steelhead in the hatchery environment. I wanted to quickly pull up the proposal here and look at the table, but at the levels that were the nominal levels that deter sea lions, I believe it's 0.6 volts per centimeter, I believe.
Correct.
There was really no effect. The fish swam through there readily. As we ramped up the voltage gradient up to 0.8, and I think we went up to 1.1, Carl.
Correct.
We saw about 13 to 33% of the fish did not pass. They kind of went into the array, but they eventually went out. Based on our testing at the hatchery, we classified those fish as not passing. So,
but over what time frame, Matt? Because we
very short time frames, and you know these results really need to, you know, you need to. I think you've all got the report or you've read our report. These are hatchery steelhead that had to be, you know, sort of walk down to the array. We gave them just a short bit of time to make a decision to pass through it or not. And, you know, when we tested the passage rates of these fish in individual tests to control fish, there wasn't any significant difference. We had to pool the trials to make it statistically significant, but we don't really know what a wild, quote wild, motivated upstream migrating fish would do when they encounter these kind of low levels of electrical water.
What level voltage gradient or whatever were you using that deterred sea lions?
We were using 0.6. That's as high as we had to go. And most trainers and physiologists, once you achieve your goal, they're not going to let you just keep taking it higher and higher and higher.
Well, that's my concern. I don't want to go higher either with fish in the ladder. I mean, we have to be concerned about that these are, you know, listed fish passing through a system that.
But of course, ladders. You know, we only had three animals to test, and Jennifer didn't want them exposed more than two or three times to disrupt their training regimen. So we couldn't really learn a lot. But most of the marine mammal specialists I talk to always have one burning question, and that is, well, what happens if these animals become acclimated to a certain level?
Yeah.
How do we, you know, we might need to tweak it and turn it up a little bit. And won't your fish managers want to know where the margin for safety is with higher levels? The other point that I want to embellish upon what Matt said, these fish in the cowlitz, we repeated that study. We had Jack Tipping do a separate study at all the same levels. 98% of those steelhead passed. Many of them hesitated once or twice, made a loop, and went right through it. But the thing to remember is you've got almost a static environment. What if you've got for flow rates in a typical hatchery a few liters per second? Those fish, cowlitz, they didn't have any strong incentive to go anywhere. They were home once they were in that channel, and they had very, very little velocity. So the question really becomes to you folks is, fine, we got data on acclimated fish in a captive hatchery environment. What's going to happen in the wild, and I use that word loosely, with naturally returning fish in velocities upwards of 2 to 3 feet per second? Is that behavior going to be the same, or are they going to go right through? There's only one way to find out.
One of the things is early in the year when the water's cold and the fish aren't particularly motivated, there's going to be quite a few steelhead potentially below the dam. So you have fish that may or may not be that motivated.
We're talking mid-April, I think, is when Matt wants to start.
You've got a lot of steelhead sitting around below the dam, potentially, in other places. I mean, it's just, I guess it gets down to what behavioral effect, even on these fishes, will help determine an unacceptable level, kind of thing. And that's where people may already feel they're getting close to that.
Well, as I said, if fish start stacking up, Matt's not going to keep running his studies.
No.
You guys are certainly invited to participate on a daily basis and observe what's going on.
Well, what is that then? I mean, I haven't had a chance to go through this, but what I do want to make sure is that we have, one, some criteria that says, okay, this is too much, and two, some reporting frequency that allows us to make that decision in real time or as close as possible to that. So you guys are looking at, I assume, video. You're not going to have a person just actually watching this.
We could do that, Gary. I mean, I think we understand the level of concern here, and we're going to start off, or our plan was to start off with the lowest levels that deter sea lions. The fish generally pass during the day, and we are going to have, we can certainly start things off initially by having a person there, not only recording, but also viewing things in real time.
Okay.
And we can do, daily, weekly updates, whatever, as soon as we can get information to you guys. So, you know, you'll have sort of very real-time information about what's going on, at least from a, you know, at least from a qualitative standpoint about what we're seeing on the film.
Yeah, the what is kind of an issue. What are we actually looking for? Is this as simple as a jolt response from a fish, or are we looking for actual fish holding below the array, refusing to go past it? I mean, that's an extreme example, but
yeah.
And are we just looking for fish that scoot sideways or do something?
It's any and all those things. I mean, the way we've sort of designed this thing is like you guys have designed your, like, spill studies. I mean, we're going to do blocks of time when the array is on and when it's off.
Okay.
And we're going to try to randomize that quite a bit during, you know, on a daily and on a weekly basis, so we cover, because we don't really know the exact numbers of fish that are using the UMT. We have an idea based on pit tag detections, but we kind of figure that if we just film enough when it's on and when it's off, we'll be looking for things, and we'll be looking for very evident changes in behavior of those fish. Mm-hmm. The things you mentioned, you know, for example, fish stacking up, fish entering the electrical field and turning around and going downstream, fish hesitating or showing swimming movements that are different than you see in control fish.
Right.
So there will be periods within the same day where we'll have the array on and the array off.
Okay.
But really, you know, we're kind of like everybody in the room there. I mean, we don't really know what it is we're going to see until we go out and do it. Our laboratory studies only allow us so much predictive capability. And what these wild fish are going to do and flowing water, the only way to know for sure, in my opinion, is to at least go out and give it a try.
Right.
And Carl's saying, and everybody needs to understand, is that if we do see things that are different, we can report those to you guys, and then the group collectively can make a decision about, if you want to, you can pull the plug.
Yeah, I just am trying to figure out how we would. So you guys are going to characterize individual fish. I'm just trying to get a picture here. They're coming up through this system. You're watching them. They hit the array. You've got it on or off, and they're going to either not behave any differently, or there may be a difference in behavior. Okay, so you're going to characterize those as a minor, medium, and severe, I would expect, or something like that.
We could do something like that. We're probably going to try to tally more discrete behaviors, like hesitations or stopping or turning around, moving downstream, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
I think you're probably going to want to characterize them in some categories too.
Yeah.
And then identify
the other thing that we have too, just so you guys know, is we also plan as sort of a backup secondary method is using travel times via the pit tag detections at Cascade Islands versus those at Washington Shore Fish Ladder. That won't be a perfect measure of any kind of effect, but we do think it'll be kind of interesting data to look at, because those fish get detected twice, the pit tag fish, and we know there's a few thousand pit tag fish that use that UMT every year. So we're not going to have pit tag readers in there, but we do have a reader at the top of the Cascades Island and also at the top of the Washington Shore where they hit it right when they go around the corner. So
the problem is, if you have detector, you have your array on and off during the day, over the period of time it takes those fish to move through there, you won't know what condition they passed under.
Well, if we do use this new technology, these smolt counters, hydroacoustics, about the size of a grapefruit, we could position one at the entrance to the array and one at the exit to the array, and we could get hard numbers so that we could statistically compare the numbers of fish moving during
on
versus off.
That's all you know. You don't have who's who in that. You don't have it took this fish longer or that Pardon? Fish longer. You won't know if it took a fish longer.
No, but I mean, as a backup, I mean, it could give you a better read on fish than, say, the pit tag approach.
The pit tag won't give you, I don't see either one of those actually being really useful.
Well, I mean, the pit tag thing, think about it for a minute. I mean, if we could get pit tag information on these animals in mostly real time, I don't even know if that's possible. Do you guys know if it's possible? When a fish hits the top of Cascade Islands, can we know that within a matter of minutes?
Yes.
It'll have the timestamp.
Exactly, to the second.
Okay, so if we can know that, then while we're there, when we are there working, we could be logging fish that hit the Cascades Island reader. We can also, you know, log them when they pass through the Washington Shore reader. So what we'll get is sort of a travel time from point A to point B. Well, we're interested in whether that travel time differs.
But you're not going to learn anything about your treatments there unless your treatments are... Unless the fish passes through that, passes both locations and they're in constant treatment. What's the point?
It could, because we're probably going to have the array on. I mean, the treatment periods might be like 4 hours.
Okay, well then you might be able to do that, but it'd be a subset.
It'd be it's a total subset, and like I said before, it's kind of what we're considering as something that's sort of free to look at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think we'd be fools not to look at it.
You just have to be careful.
Even if it doesn't pan up with anything, there's probably going to be so much noise in their passage data or whatever that. But to not look at it when we get it for free, I think we'd be making a mistake.
There's just some limitations. That's all
right.
I'm saying, Matt. We have to be careful. The other thing that I want to touch on is the Didson float or raft or whatever you call it. We want to make sure that that doesn't move in any way that's. Unanticipated.
Yeah, it's not probably not going to be used, Gary. The Didson, we've taken the Didson, I think, as far as we can take it by temporarily putting it into the UMT, doing our test like we did last week with Bill. We've got to a point now where we think that the resolution is going to work for us. But we really have to go out there and put it in and look for fish. And the raft is probably not going to work. What we'd like to do is design and install sort of a frame above the water where the Didson, like we've told you guys before the whole time, the Didson is going to be just subsurface, probably no more than a foot. But we want to mount it on a frame that we could attach to the sides of the UMT above the water.
Will that frame allow you to raise and lower the...
Yeah, we want to engineer, sort of design and build, maybe with Carl's help and Bill's help, kind of design a little system that we can raise and lower it when we need to either do maintenance on it or reposition it slightly or something like that. So that's our plan for that. We've sort of... there's really no reason to use the raft.
Yeah, that's fine. I was thinking you were probably going to have to attach to the wall anyway. So
yeah, we kind of knew that all along. I mean,
you just need to be able to go up and down with the water flow. I'm not sure how much that varies up and down in that ladder. Not a lot. So you don't need a lot.
I might ask. I noticed in Robert's report you had an Appendix C where you summarized some Didson work. Do you guys have anything that you've made up for a fishway that? In the way of frames, or was it a trolley or something that you used?
No, we used some I-beams that racked using those acoustic deterrents. So we just used those. I mean, and actually it was not the best. If we wanted to do it better, we'd create some different locations. But, I mean, it is evident we need it fixed.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think a rack can do it.
On the bits and poles, if you use a bracket, you just set that over the UMT with a crane. Arms goes up and down, or you can position the camera back and forth. So it's been done.
Is the plan to have it out of the water when you're not recording?
Well, we could remove it when we're not using it.
I think we don't want something in the fish wave unless you're actually monitoring.
Right.
It's just over it on the water supply.
Yeah.
So is the goal for the presentation, is it to document an FPALM recommendation on moving forward on your key project milestones? Is
well, I think that's why we're here. In August, you know, it seemed as though there was interest in seeing the study move forward. There were recommendations about sort of proving the DDSIM conceptually, and my view today was that this would be a follow-up discussion, and with the hope that there would be continuing support for seeing this next stage of the study completed in support of a system that will ultimately help the co-managers deal with sea lions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can we get a look at the framework, how you're going to do that once you figured it out?
For the DDSIM?
Yeah, for the
absolutely.
DDSIM.
We can provide you an engineering drawing, but we're going to have time for that. We don't need that ready until essentially the first week of March.
Right.
So we've got all winter to do that. It's what has to happen on the second, the Corps is going to start lowering the water volume on the first. We've been given one window on the second to put this thing in. If we miss that, I guess from what you folks are saying, we're done for the year. Is that right, Ben or Dave or Tammy?
That's it.
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay. Okay, well, I guess...
That's a little different issue. I don't think there's anybody here now who's concerned about the... Speak up.
Well, I was about to. I'm just waiting for you guys to quit your jabbering.
Yeah. Well, there's other issues. The way I see it is that you've got, number one, the antenna, and whether its presence or absence of the latter, is that going to be a problem here in the UMT?
The antenna?
The antenna. That's what you need to install. Right?
Yeah,
it's
good.
Just
one second.
No, the antenna.
Oh.
The frame.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The array. Yeah, not antenna, I'm sorry.
The array. The array, the field, yes. The field.
December 2nd.
That thing. The big 40-foot box.
Yes.
You're going to put the big 40-foot box in.
Exactly.
That's the big issue first. Yep. We've looked at the engineering-wise, hydraulic-wise. We're not concerned about that. It can be there and not be there. It's not going to probably cause any impact to fish. Maybe lamprey, but salmon, no. So I'm not concerned about that. Then there's the DDSIM framework. That's an issue. Mm-hmm. And then there's the criteria we use. There's two levels of criteria. One is whether or not we go forward or stop the test. And then the other one is, do we put it in the river as a deployable array for sea lions?
Well, I would recommend what we did with BPA, with Bill Mazin. We have go-no-go criteria, and
right.
You just reach a decision
right.
point in a matrix. And
one of those is way out there, but one of those is more immediate, and that's whether or not there's an impact to the fish going through the UMT that's unacceptable. So we have to come up with that. And what we need there from Matt is a good idea of what we're going to be seeing. What do we have in front of us to look at?
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be two or three levels of severity of behavioral response, or are we going to have videos, some pictures? You know, what are we going to look at in the season, and then what level of concern are we going to? What are we going to use to actually say no, to say stop? That's not clear in my head as to what point you say that.
Well, I mean, we just had a discussion this morning about McNary orifice cuts at McNary about how we're going to be using a similar, looking at
right.
data and that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of visitation.
We're talking like one, if we saw one fish nose up there, we're going to have a conference call.
Yeah.
I would assume we'd have at least the same level of, I don't know, interest at the UMT. I'm getting a lot of pushback from my shop that they're very concerned about this. They're looking at the levels of testing. Your sea line is 0.6. We're looking at testing up to 1.2. You saw negative effects at 0.8 to 1.1 for steelhead. So it looks like it's a pretty thin safety margin we've got for fish. So our guys are going, wait a minute.
Well, again, a static water environment of a fish that don't have a safe to go anywhere. I mean, you've got to take those factors into account.
Yeah, well, that may be. I mean, I've got guys that are working every year on AFF, and they have problems getting fish going through picketed weeds because of flows funky. How they change picketed weed configurations, and that backs up fish.
Right.
So they're going, if you have issues with that, and you throw an electric field in there, our guys have some big concerns. I mean, you talk about stopping or delaying fish to the tribal guys, you're going to get some pretty heated interest. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a lot of heat right now in my seat to try to explain why I think this has some merit to test. I mean, because I'm still trying to work in my mind, okay, we're going to be working in a concrete flume, basically, which is going to be a very fancy laboratory test that we're going to have to then take the data from this and apply it out in the field. and I still haven't seen what our kind of next prototype step is going to be. Are we talking small, discrete systems set around an adult entrance? Are we talking something across the whole river at 205 Bridge? I mean,
the entrance.
Well, that makes it.
It's what we talked about last time. Is when you have sleds in, you reduce the velocities. And this may give you the opportunity to remove a sled and have a barrier with larger for the same to get inside of while it's being chased and then enter the ladder. And give you a bigger safe zone.
Hey, Matt.
I don't know if that's making me feel warm and fuzzy or not.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable with the level of resolution with this latest Stinson test to be able to detect this behavioral level of detail that people are talking about needing to see?
Yeah. You know, all I can tell you is that it was improved from when me and Brian went out there a couple of weeks ago. Bill came down, and I have to admit that the resolution was better. The view we got was better. And so that, you know, sort of buoyed my confidence. But, you know, the thing about it is that the only way that we can really know for sure and can we see what we write down on paper that we want to see, and we can come together with you guys and set up a bunch of criteria about when to stop and this and that. I'm to the point right now where we need to go out and do it. I mean, it's something that we can sit here and debate and guess about, but until somebody actually goes out and deploys a Dixon, when fish are going through there in the springtime, it's very hard for us to make a really confident prediction about we're going to see this, 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 and this. And we're, you know, the USGS, I hope everybody understands, you know, our job is to come in here and independently evaluate this device. And our whole mission, or the thing that we're most concerned about, is not whether the device works or whether it doesn't, but to try to make sure we give you guys a good test of it.
Right. We want to make sure, I mean, that there's a key point here, and that's to go ahead at all with anything.
That's going to be, you know, based on the information that Carl and I can give you about everything we know about this, we can provide you with all the information we have, and that I think that's one of the reasons why Carl is there today, to try to, you know, get your initial approval to put the array in.
Right.
And then we do have time, as Carl mentioned, we have quite a bit of time to develop the frame for the Didson. How will that be deployed? To talk more about it, to come up with criteria for action,
right.
And stuff. We have until the springtime to do that.
Well,
so.
Matt, here's the thing: if you, we're going to rely on you, because if there's no way to evaluate this thing, then why would you put it in? So, you know, we need two pieces of information here. One is that the box array itself is benign, fish passing through the UMT, then we can put it in. The second piece is that you have a way to effectively evaluate behavioral responses of salmon and lamprey as they approach this thing, or at least for salmon, and that you can tell us that we have a problem. I'm speaking. So you guys can speak later.
Oh, I'll be there in a second.
You said the L word.
I said it. I kind of backed up a bit. Anyway, for salmon, you need to be able to tell us that, yes, you will be able to detect a behavioral response to the array, and we'll go with that. I mean, that's up to you, but that's, you know, I have to trust you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think we share the same ideals. I guess the only thing that I would say is that I can certainly tell you guys a hell of a lot more next spring in, you know, the initial few days, I hope.
Right.
When fish are going through there, the resolution that we saw on Friday, you know, it's either going to work really well and we're going to really see fish very clearly to be able to tell you guys things about their behavior, or it's going to work something less than that. Bill seems to have a high degree of confidence that it will work effectively. It is a little bit different environment, a little bit different shooting angle for the Didson. So we need to go out and we need to put it in. We need to collect some film. At least that's a good thing. We'll have, you know, documented evidence so we all can get together and make a decision about, are we seeing what we want to see? Should we do this and that and so on and so forth? But
okay, Matt, I'm going to put some words in your mouth here. So, Matt, you think that this has a decent chance of working?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I that's an unequivocal
yeah,
yes.
Gary.
There's a quote. Sorry, but I, you know, that what you just said didn't really make me feel warm and fuzzy. But
it's the only thing that we've seen so far that we have a decent working chance of getting behavioral information on fish as they encounter this array.
Okay.
The confidence level was increased Friday that we'll be able to have a field of view long enough that we can see the areas within the UMT that we need to see. So we've established that on Friday. That was pretty good. The only thing we did, we were able to see objects that we purposely put down there. I didn't tell you guys that, but one of the ways that we tested it was to put weights on ropes, and we could put them at different distances from the camera. We know that we can see those from different distances. We estimated the length from the camera, the distance from the camera that we could see. So those kind of metrics were, you know, they're there. They were real. When fish start going through there, if they go through singly or they go through in groups of 50 or what have you, I don't know. You guys may know better than I do.
I'll be happy if you can just see them as they go through singly.
We would be very happy to see that. So
yeah.
Right now, I have more evidence weighing that says the potential is there than I do to the contrary.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, when we were out testing the long range, I might have had a different answer for it. But the short range Didson with, I can't remember what lens he put on there, Carl. That bigger lens.
Yep.
Was that his telephoto lens or something like that?
I don't remember.
Something analogous to that. It was some kind of concentrating lens.
Markedly reduced the bubbles and the static, and it made a difference for sure.
Okay. Well, the key is we want to get to the end of this thing with some data that we can use to move forward. If it's just a bunch of mush, then everybody wasted their money.
It's not just Matt that wants a rigorous evaluation. As I've always said, we don't want to develop something that
you
won't use or that harms fish. I mean, why would we do that? That was counterintuitive to anything.
You
I mean,
need to be able to convince folks that it won't harm fish.
And we wanted people like Matt and Ken to do these studies because it keeps us at an arm's length distance, and it adds so much more scientific credibility when you have a recognized researcher doing the work. So,
you know, there is some things we could do over the winter, you guys, that we could get a framing system established, or we get the Didson going. You know, we might be able to talk to our local hatchery guys here and do some filming in a raceway with some fish in it.
Right.
Get some camera work done and get ourselves set up really nicely. But
okay.
So far, what we've seen in the UMT, like I said, it hasn't. The evidence is weighing more towards go than no go.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing here is a couple different things. One is we need to go around the room to each person, including Dave and Tom, to say, yes, we approve of this thing moving forward, this concept moving forward, or no, we don't. Because there's a lot of discussion, and it's helpful, but I really want to take this meeting to document that. And if the answer is no, we're not comfortable moving forward, then we need to get down a little more of the detail as to why. Then I guess the second thing for today would be to get a yes or no, and I assume this is kind of linked to the first question, a yes or no on installing this array on December 2.
That's what it comes down to, is do we feel comfortable enough to go forward in December 2, because we can work with the other issues. Right.
Right. The monitoring plan, it will be developed in the past.
Yeah, my issue for the tribal thing is lamprey are going to be foremost. How does this thing affect lamprey swimming?
Mm-hmm.
First off, I don't know how you're going to evaluate that. So you have to put it in and then hopefully get some lamprey. And I mean, Matt, did you do anything? So you used weights. Did you use anything like throw a small hose in there or something like that to see what that looked like? I mean, because lamprey are going to be a booger.
Mechanical lamprey?
Yeah, I mean.
No, we didn't. And
we've got a big rubberized one.
You're right. Lamprey are going to be a much bigger challenge than adult salmonids are.
Exactly.
You do know two things, though, Tom. First off, the lamprey shouldn't be there in large numbers in March, April, and early May. Secondly, from Matt's studies, the responses from lamprey, they tolerated fields that were double or even triple what the salmonids tolerated. And I think, Matt, you even had video showing lamprey right on the electrode or so close to it that you couldn't tell whether they were on it or not.
I don't know if I feel comfortable with that. I mean, it doesn't mean it's good for them. They might... You got a moth sitting on a
for
a long time. It's usually not good for
them. That's like a bird landing on a high power line. There's no potential there. They're not feeling anything when they're on the electrode.
Yeah, no, I mean, we do have a video substantiating what Carl is saying, and lampreys seem to readily go through a little bit higher voltage gradients than steelhead did. But the issue with lampreys out in the field really doesn't have much to do with the array. It has more to do with the fact that we have no idea how many or how often those fish use that UMT.
Well,
so we could sit there, and you'll see this in the study plan. We could film for days and not see a lamprey go through there. So it's more of a methodological sort of sample size problem for us.
Yeah, I
just don't know. I mean, nobody knows the use of the UMT by lampreys. And so, therefore, what we proposed to do with lampreys was the only thing that we could think of, you guys, unless you have a better idea, the only thing that we could think of was to do just what I said, and that was film. We do know that you can see lampreys on Ditson. In fact, there's good lamprey footage from Alaska on the Ditson website. Yeah,
there is some data with RT and with...
Well, it's last year's work with the new...
You don't know specific, but you've got general idea when they're going into the...
Oh, we could assume that they're going to be using the UMT to some extent during the time of their passage at Bonneville.
Well,
and, of course, you can target...
But that's not the issue here.
No.
The real issue is whether or not, if this thing is deployed in the river, that it delays lamprey. So saying that we're doing this when lamprey are passing doesn't make me feel too good. I mean, unless you have another plan out there, that you're saying this is just a plan to assess salmon only, and then we have another plan that we're going to assess lamprey before anything's deployed in the river. Well, and sturgeon and, you know, all the species of concern. I mean, is this the one-size-fits-all test, or is it a test? Is this just a salmon test?
Well, the lamprey were added to Matt's study because of the concerns expressed by the tribes to get some information on lamprey, because it's such a resource that's of such critical importance to them. So we initially thought we were going to do just salmon, but when the concerns started being raised, we thought, you know, we need to get some information for the partners to show whether there's anything going on with lamprey.
So you need to do this study when lamprey are present, and you need...
Which is why it's being carried into July in Matt's study plan.
Okay, because I thought I heard from you, Carl, that this was going to be done before lamprey were even passed.
Well, when it starts, so you'll have some preliminary information, you know, in April to know how the camera's working, how the array is functioning. You know, how the overall array is working. You'll have a window of time before any lamprey show up. But Matt added the lamprey to the study in order to get some data on that species.
So, Tom, do you think that... I heard you loud and clear there's lamprey concerns. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you could work within the construct of a monitoring plan and work that so that your concerns are alleviated? Is there anything that can be done in the monitoring?
You're asking me how many lumps do I want to take back in my office when you're trying to say so eloquently. I'll take it back to them, and I mean, you got to remember, lamprey right now, with the numbers going over Bonneville and all that stuff, the tribes are ultra sensitive about lamprey right now. And anything that is perceived that is going to negatively impact them is going to be a very hard sell for them to swallow.
Well, we're going to be at levels below those that stopped lamprey during all of these tests. That's
the
thing
is,
right,
that when it did stop, it was like 80%.
Well, there are other little issues, such as you are constricting
the flow,
the channel, and increasing velocity.
Which is the wrong way to go for lamprey.
And I know they have
0.4 per second.
Yeah, it's
with their ability to swim, that may be some
problems. But we just don't know, because it's going to be hitting a structure that's different.
And the main thing is, we, and that's the problem we're having.
It is,
like,
adding an extra.
Yeah, it's actually one impediment. I mean, like, that's why we put the entrance to Cascade Island was, and we seem to get more lamprey through there. So this has kind of been our primary lamprey entrance right now.
Right.
So most of your lamprey are going to be going through this device.
Test entrance.
And test entrance, and we're not sure if we have a methodology or a good one.
They're tagged, right, this year?
They're going to be pit tagged.
We're going to try.
We're still debating. We want to see the whole study results to decide whether we want to do RT or not. We don't want to because of the negative effects on passage, but we may need to, depending on the final.
It's just the way also the question is, can you get enough of them to tag? Is going to be the other issue.
They prioritize it.
Yeah, I can. So, I mean,
the other thing to kind of remember is that these guys, if in the future, sea lion season, the lamprey season at the dam don't overlap all that much. So the capability is there, and if we feel there are enough negative effects to not have it on after June 1 and to have that thing off, we can do that.
Yes.
So it's not a matter of, you know, we can say, look, we just want to avoid having this on when lamprey pass most of the time. And if we're looking at Bonneville Dam as the location, you can usually get away with that. There isn't that much overlap. Most of them will be coming up by then. So once June 1 gets here and sea lions are starting to go, you don't have to have this thing on. We want to make sure we're not affecting passage.
Yeah.
That's another way to deal with it if we're really concerned.
Because right now it sounds like, just with the limited technology, I don't know if we're going to be able to get a good monitoring evaluation
right,
with the structure of lamprey. So,
do you want to potentially affect them or not?
I mean, that's the message I got to take home from my guy saying, like, yeah, we can do this test. It's going to be important. We'll get good information on lamprey. We'll get a good assessment on them. But I'm not getting that feel right now. So it's going to be hard for me to be straight-faced saying, yes, this is going to answer our questions for lamprey. So how am I going to take it back to my office and say, hey, we're not going to really get much information on lamprey, so we're still not going to know. It may have a negative impact. I can't tell you yes or no.
The antenna.
So the option is to just say we want to stop.
Stop testing. I mean, that's the message I'm going to pick, unless someone's got a brainiac idea of how we're going to start monitoring
better. Into this, the DMT. We really want to make sure they're there.
We've had a lot of problems when you just take lamprey, you handle and stuff them into place, especially with any kind of velocity, expecting them to keep moving forward.
They tend
to react to the handling and
they fall and go back down.
So
we thought about that, about releasing lampreys purposely into the UMT so we'd have some animals going through there. Tom, for lampreys, I guess I'm not sure what to say. I mean, we know so little about their use of the UMT, at least for some onids. We have pit tag information. I suppose we're getting a little bit more of that with lampreys. We could take a look at that, but. Based on the work we did previously with lampreys, we did stop them quite readily at 1.8 volts per second and 5 milliseconds. The problem with that information is that 5 milliseconds and even the 1.8 volts per centimeter are electrical conditions that are highly unlikely to be used out in the field. We were actually trying to find levels to stop these fish, and so it took a little bit to really change their behavior, and I think Carl would confirm those aren't in anybody's plans to kind of to go that high.
There's no need to go that high unless you want to stop fish like we do with invasive carp in the Chicago Ship Canal.
We're not going there, and that's, like Jay said, we can probably avoid lamprey season for any deployment anyway, so the issue is more the UMT, the testing the UMT and the array that's going to be deployed, and will that cause problems?
Well, can we
velocity?
Or do we have an effective way of monitoring to be able to document
that? See, that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes down to a risk analysis for our guys saying, if you can monitor this, we might let you go forward. So, but if I'm going to tell them that...
What about video camera to look at lamprey holding along just downstream of it? I mean, what happens when they get to an area they don't like, they usually end up just sitting
there. They hang on the side and they're done.
I don't know what they do now.
So if there was a way of actually videoing a rove or even a rove or something to video periodically during tests, would that be enough to say, well, at least they're not holding up?
I could take that back and get some lumps and see how they react.
It's better than nothing. I mean, you need something to take back or you're just going to get beat up on. So.
Yeah, because I'm just going to get...
The only plan that we had, Tom, was during the time of lamprey passage, and this would primarily be at night, we've got the you know, the dates of passage for lampreys, and we could even work just around the peak if we wanted to. We were just going to film with the Ditson, and hopefully if we filmed enough, we would catch some lampreys going through there when it's off and when it's on. But it's a much different, it's the same approach as salmonids. It's just that we just don't know how many fish we'll really see, just numbers-wise. So you could bolster that, I guess, with a little bit of video if that works. It's something that could be explored.
Yeah, you're going to have to ask something else either, just because, cameras, I don't know.
You know, I've said this to Phil Roger in the past. Maybe you could re-invite a staff person from Critic to be on site during this study and
send John up there.
One of your scientists are
X-ray eyes. Yeah.
Okay. So,
the main problem is, like, if we have a tool that actually allows you to enumerate, evaluate lamprey, we can have guys up there looking at it all day, and if they don't have a tool that works, it doesn't matter whether they're there or not. They're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
Worth the chance.
Yeah.
If you can't measure something, that's not worth the chance. Considering the overlap is...
Does it have to be a systematic measurement, or can it be an observation more...
It gets to where a lot of this is how good you see and what you need to see to make behavioral effects, and it's going to be that much.
I don't think it's a behavioral effect issue that we're worried about here. It's a huge behavioral effect. It's stoppage.
But if you're getting totally stoppage, we'll be able to deal with that. But that's a pretty negative impact.
What are you looking for? Is a stoppage really the issue? These are lampreys, so a little delay is not a big issue.
Nonetheless, it's more of stoppage and just let me think.
That's what I'd be worried about, is if they hit that point and go, well,
they're done.
Right. I'm done. I'm back out of here.
So we'll have, especially if we do RT, we'll have that.
Yeah.
But even further, if you had deployment of cameras or could look at
something.
Leading edges. The same.
I think we'll take something back and say, I can give them the red face test that, yeah, we'll be able to evaluate to some degree what effect lampreys can have on
us.
Are
the lamprey going to have to, move along the panels themselves?
Well, maybe I'll let John speak to the design of the frame, but the nose cones on there are designed to smooth out any transitions through the array.
What I'm wondering about is if they're right on the frame where the electrical signal is coming from, is it going to be stronger there, and will they not want to attach to it because of it?
Well, I guess the only thing we have to go on is what Matt did in his tests in the tank, Matt. I guess extrapolating that behavior is as good as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about all we have to go on. We do know that, some of those lampreys would be within the electrical field, and they would be attached to the side. Sometimes they'd be right near the electrodes and stuff, like it wasn't even bothering them. When we did get a reaction from them, they would, it's pretty clear on the video, they would enter the electrical part of the water, and they would freak out, turn around, and head downstream.
Okay, so,
yeah.
Tom, I hear...
That was at the high test level, Matt.
That was pretty much only at the highest test level, yeah.
So, Tom, I'm hearing that right now there's significant concerns. You're not confident that we're going to be able to get this resolved. You'll take it back, maybe take some lumps, but if we draw a line in the sand today and say, okay, are we going to move forward with this install frame and array on December 2, right now you're saying no on that, based on what
you're saying. Unless you come away saying we will not, we have our concerns about salmon and that kind of stuff. I'll let Noah take the lumps from us on that one, explain why I think that. If you said you'd have this thing out before lamprey came in, I might be able to sell that back at the shop.
And Tom, it is removable. This can go out in a day.
If you can't measure...
But my point is, if you can't measure the effects, then if you can't measure it, then I can't give assurance to my guys that, we're going to know if there's
an effect. We'll take it out, but we won't know whether
we don't know if we should or not.
And so part of it is, can by June 1, do you have enough salmon information to know
that there's no effect? And then...
Yeah, we should know that. The salmon test will probably be good insight into what we'd be able to see with lampreys. So that'll be a little bit of extra information we would have. we could make an evaluation at that time and pull the plug if we don't think it's going to work for lampreys.
Exactly. I mean, the lamprey study is there if you want to know how it affects lamprey. If you don't want to know the answer to that question, there's no need to do any work on lampreys.
And Matt, if this December 2nd install goes forward, how fast can you guys be ready to actually measure fish going through there? Do we look at fish going through?
The most important thing is to get their device in there, and then I figured we've got a few months of work we could do, or we have some time we could figure out the intricacies, but we've got the camera, and we've got to get the lens and really just design the frame and get that set up, and then we could be ready to go.
I'm just wondering if we can look at fish going through there in the winter before,
with the camera,
to see if you see what kind of resolution that these guys be able to see that image and see, you know, how confident they are for the spring.
We could certainly pursue that. I don't think that we have months and months of work ahead of us. If we needed to accelerate things a little bit, get the camera, get the lenses, we've got everything else. Really, the biggest stumbling block is just trying to design a frame for the Ditson that we can readily deploy and the thing if we need to, and then get it out if we need to, that kind of stuff. So we could start working on that, very quickly, and we could just film during the winter if you guys wanted to. I don't know who's going through there, but we might see some fish, I guess.
Winter steelhead.
Okay.
So, Dave, yeah. We're going around the room here. So, Tom got Dave on. I waited till that just that moment.
Perfectly timed.
December 2 install of the frame and array. What's your take on this?
He's not in his head.
We're good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's just
getting some
now.
Water.
He's gaggy now.
He's gaggy.
Come on, Dave.
So I'm.
You need a Heimlich for a response here.
I share all of Tom's concerns from the lamprey questions. But I think we should go forward with this. I'm pretty confident we can come up with some criteria to get it out of there if it poses a problem. I think we can devise some way to look at lamprey and figure out if it's going to be a problem and get it out of there.
Okay.
In the long run, though, I kind of agree with what people have been saying to a point. If this test goes perfectly well this year, to me, that's not a green light that we're going to just automatically put something in the river. It's got a whole process to work through, and it's not just a given. So I don't want too many expectations along that line.
Yeah, that's the second level of go ahead.
Okay, got it.
I would agree with what Dave said and share the concerns for lamprey that Tom's expressed.
Okay. Gary?
Yeah, as far as if we're just talking about putting the frame in, I'm okay with putting it in. As far as the test goes, we still need some discussion on the criteria and how well we can see fish behavior. There's unknowns and questions there, but certainly put the frame in.
Yeah.
And we'll work those out.
Tom, are you at a point where you could be okay with us moving forward without endorsing it, or would you object from it moving forward?
I might be able to put on my car salesman outfit and go back and say, hey, we'll let him put the frame in, and then that doesn't stop, and then that gives us time to, and then we could talk before I try to figure out how to deal with that, right?
Okay.
I don't know.
The idea of being able to yank it by June 1st.
Well, that's going to be an obvious. Right. At the very least, it's CC lab, you're going to have to yank it. And that's unless someone comes up with a good idea of how we're going to be able to use it to monitor lamprey. And then I'll have to talk to him and say, give our guys assurance that the sand issues will be worked out.
Okay.
That is a secondary issue for us.
These are kind of getting into what I would consider almost a studies review work group.
Yeah.
The deployment of the box array and all that is I see that as O&M, but
yeah.
We get into the discussions about criteria and really a research question. I'm wondering if this doesn't go through.
It really should.
probably should, but for this point...
Well, yeah, we didn't have any caveats imposed by the SRWG when we gave the presentation. It was really, your comment was be careful about the impression that you're stopping any fish, but we didn't have any limitations or anything imposed upon us, and they got pretty much the full deal.
Yeah.
But we can go back to them if you think it's needed.
It's more the review of the proposals. I mean, that is the proposal review group, really.
Right.
You know, so looking at the scientific merit and the methodologies that you're using to determine
right.
the facts.
And you've looked at that.
Those are SRWG.
Right.
And those things have been developing, and I don't know that they have been. Fully.
Well, we gave them a copy of a conceptual proposal, and I gave a presentation, as you remember. But
I know, Bob.
It wasn't really what you're measuring and how you're going to evaluate what.
Well, it's true. There were some specifics that needed to be fleshed out.
It needs to go back to them.
Yep.
Well, now that we hopefully have a more finalized proposal.
Yeah, once you get the proposal. Right.
I mean, we've gone from using Pittex to not using Pittex to using a Ditson to a different Ditson. Now we're talking possibly acoustic monitoring. I mean.
So are you saying dust off the proposal and tweak it and present it?
Just get us the most updated best one you've got so we can take a look at it.
Evaluation.
All I'm saying is there's more work to do. All we're talking about today, I think, is putting the array and getting that ready to go. So that's step one. But then the rest of it kind of belongs more in SRWG discussion.
It'd be nice to come out of here with unanimous, yes, let's install, but we'll wait on that.
Get that from me.
I understand. So we'll, can you...
Yeah.
Can you bring this back to your folks, Tom, this week and get back to us?
Tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow would be great. Monday?
Probably Monday.
Okay.
I'm guessing. Hopefully tomorrow. But
well, you know, I've offered to come over and give a presentation too, but I haven't got any invites, so.
I will tell them that you're willing to come over and give us a discussion.
Absolutely.
Great. No problem.
Okay. Well, that's how we're leaving it right now.
Can I interject one thing? This is Alan Brower with Patagas. There was some mention about 45 minutes ago about testing this with the Pittex system. How and when would that occur?
We're not going to.
No, well Matt's not going to. But this is, you're talking, Alan, you're talking about the electric array.
Bam.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to do that before we do any actual studies on fish. I've had a talk with Don.
Oh, okay.
Worf and also Sandra. And, I mean, we had quite a go-around several months ago with this, and I personally thought it was a simple matter of just taking our pulse unit up there, plugging it in the wall, and seeing what happens. But our chief design engineer, Lee, says, no, it's the field. We have to have the field in place. And as I said earlier, it's an easy matter to use parasitic electrodes, which confine the field to that 20-foot length. Even so, we want to test this thing and run it when you guys are running to see if you can detect any effect on your equipment. So we're going to do that probably in March.
Okay. And it sounds like you've been in touch with people and you have all kinds of contact info and all that good stuff.
Yes, I do. But I have alerted Sandra and Dawn about the plan, and I heard all the stories about the Canadian Navy and the issues that you've had, and you know, we're sensitive to those, and we view this as one of the go-no-go criteria that we have to, you know, test our equipment adequately and ascertain whether there's any effect on your detection system.
Rick?
We could spend a lot of time without purpose. If the field interferes with the pit tag detection, then that probably aborts this whole thing.
Probably so. If we can't re-engineer it and control
I think you ought to do that as soon as possible after the installation so that we know where we need to be going or not going, because if it can't be reconfigured, then there's no need to even take anything before SRWG.
Well, you know, we got to make sure we have the pulse units built and all that sort of stuff. So it may be, you know, February-ish, but we could probably do it.
That still seems awfully late. But,
Okay, so what I heard here was a couple things. One is unanimous support minus Critfic moving forward with the install on December 2. We'll get more information. I don't, but that's kind of where we're at on the December 2 install. After the next step is kick this back to SRWG to work through study details, since that's where we work through things like study details. Kick it back to SRWG, and in that process, we also need to incorporate what Rick just commented on about the pit tag capability test.
Okay.
So, that's how I see this right now. We'll get more information from Tom probably Monday or early next week.
Yep.
But it sounds like more details to be worked on through SRWG.
Could you contact, either put me on the list or Shane, keep us apprised of where you are and what you've learned, what changes have been when Tom gets back to you at some point.
Sure.
But for right now, what I'm hearing is we should plan on going ahead with the install in the second.
That's...
or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we're wanting, that's where I think we're heading, yes. But
I
mean, we
have crews, I mean, I don't want them working Thanksgiving weekend. I mean, we're...
Yeah. Stay on course.
Great.
Yep.
We can pull this up later if we need to.
But yeah, stay on track, and we definitely take your concerns seriously, Tom. We'll continue to work for a solution on that, but right now, I would say stay on track for the December 2 install.
We'll bring Tom from my
yeah. Okay. How about that for a 15-minute discussion?
It's going to get worse.
Obviously, you guys will keep me informed, because I think most of your debate or the discussions you want to have really revolve around our proposal study plan. So I'm more than happy to, over the next month or whatever, work with you guys. We'll get together, hash this stuff out.
Well, I think that having an SRWG discussion on that is appropriate. Okay. And well, that needs to go to language.
Sorry.
Looking the wrong way.
We need to the link to feed this to SRWG. Something.
They're all on the FPON mailing list. They'll make sure they see them.
Okay.
Minutes.
Yeah,
this
has to do somebody.
Need to be more specific about it, just seeing it pass.
Yeah.
I'll make sure that they.
Yeah, we'll coordinate that with.
I mean, it's just, it seems appropriate. If you want to continue to have it in here, that's fine, too. It just takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Has your replacement been hired?
I don't think so.
Yes.
The other one is.
Yep.
So I can send it to him and have him carry it forward?
I didn't know I said something.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the recommendation.
That was agenda item 4.
Sorry.
So send it to Sean.
I will.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
Bye.
Class dismissed.
Class is dismissed. Thank you very much for coming.
Appreciate the opportunity. Guys.
Appreciate it. Let's. We'll get through. Mark is here to discuss agenda item number 9, the roof replacement. So we're skipping forward for the benefit of Mark.
Oh,
we're coming back. We're coming back.
And then are you saying
the other one is quickly?
Yeah. Well, this
probably.
Yeah. This is a quick one.
Well, the last one was only 15 minutes.
Yeah. This is a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'm one.
Gary.
Yeah, exactly.
Lawyers is requesting lunch after this.
Put us back on the schedule.
All right.
It's all good. We're done.
Okay.
We can take folks want to take a lunch break after this agenda item?
Yep. We can just, I mean, we can come back here.
Come back in here.
Yeah, we come back in here during the meeting. I said, let's give a chance to grab
half,
the
half hour, Matt.
Okay. Let's get through this one first for Mark's benefit.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I was here. And I'm a structural engineer, not a biologist. And I'm
keep it that way. It's much better that way.
Design lead on the Washington Shore Fish Viewing Building gable roof. I gave you the background last time. That building over there where the fish ladder runs adjacent to, it's leaking. And Jim Runkles and Bonneville Project would like to fix that by putting a roof over the top of the structure. And last time I presented the design as it was done last year, there were some columns. We were going to have to do some big excavation and put some columns in front of the fish viewing windows. It was really ugly, and I asked the designers to take another look at that. We've since, actually just as recently as last week, come up with an alternative design. The columns are going to go on top of the wall. It's a lot less intrusive to the interior of the structure, but I don't want to get into seismic details, but this building was deemed seismically deficient about a decade ago, and that was the whole issue. They didn't want to add any more mass to the building. What we have to do, there's about a 3-inch concrete layer of concrete on top of that roof structure. There's some big beams there, and we need to remove that and kind of replace it with something that brings it up to being seismically efficient or seismically capable. And that's a lot easier, believe it or not. And we met with the contractor today. They're going to give us a timeline on that. We're planning on hopefully awarding this mid-January. We're going to ask them if they can perform that work within the NYC period, mainly the demolition of that concrete. If you turn this around, these were the notes I sent to Tammy of my kind of minutes of this meeting we had 2 months ago. And I kind of outlined work activities can be divided as following with time restrictions. Concrete demolition must occur during in-water work period. I think everybody agreed that that's kind of noisy and vibrations and so forth. And then excavation, we're not going to need anymore. That's number two, so we could scratch that. Concrete placement may be able to be done during at night after the in-water work period, and steel erection, roof erection, same thing. It depended on the decibel levels. I met with the contractor today. We're actually going through the 8A process with this, not a bid, but negotiations. And they're going to give me a decibel level on their equipment, so I guess I can give you that, or maybe get an indication of what decibel levels we're looking at as far as this work. What would be allowed? I mean, so that's something we have to put in the specs. And it's going to be concrete.
You got one, Gary?
No decibels.
No decibels.
Weight criteria.
What are we talking about here?
Concrete vibration. So they're going to be placing concrete. So a truck's going to come on here. The building's going to be closed, and there's going to be placement of concrete. And then a vibrator. So they're going to be vibrating concrete.
But when? What date?
We just asked him today, how long will it take to remove that concrete and place the concrete? Can you do that during the in-water work period? So he's checking on that right now. I just met him at 10 o'clock today. So the vibration of concrete, I don't know if that'll be either February or March time frame. And then the other work...
Because you realize in-water work period, that's the end of February.
Yeah, I know that.
And so there's any noise left.
Do we just assume that work's going to be done at night? Anything that has, like, the steel erection, they're going to have pneumatic, they're going to be tightening bolts.
Gotcha.
Rattle,
yeah. Some schwabs. But that's at night.
And we can make it at night. But last time we discussed it, could be done outside the in-water work window, and depending on the decibel level, maybe daytime work, maybe nighttime work.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember talking about decibel levels.
Well, you may assume that it's going to be loud enough.
Okay.
I mean, do you want to...
The easiest thing, I guess...
Our criteria are no activities within, 50 feet or something.
This is right there.
The ladder. Right. And this is our main ladder, and this is, you're starting to talk about time of the year where we start having fish passage. So, that would not be acceptable.
So it has to be at night?
I'm not even sure it could be at night.
Uh-oh.
This is an uh-oh. Because what we don't want to do is have fish back on the ladder either if we were getting into... I don't know the time period yet. I'm struggling with that.
Okay, we're gonna award this mid-January, and they're really not gonna have. They're gonna have time to demolish the concrete.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's fine. We're good there.
But then placement of the concrete and then erection of the steel and the roof. I mean, they're not gonna have submittals in, and they're not gonna have that fabricated yet. Their steel trusses. So, I mean, that's gonna come.
See 30 September.
April, May,
okay.
Sometime
yeah,
like
see,
that.
That's right in the middle of the passage period. No, that's not acceptable. We can't have noise not that close to the ladder This is our main ladder. That's this is not a fish passage issue. That's a take. Mm-hmm. I don't know that how I can get out of not having a consultation on this one.
Okay, that's a little different than what I recall from last time.
No, I mean, I think I would. That's the same reaction I'd have no matter what. If we're going to be doing that kind of work that is noisy right next to the ladder, I assume that we'd get most of this work done in one work period. We were concerned about steelhead, but, you know, that's lesser of a concern than May or April when you've got tens of thousands of adults passing through this thing.
What about during the summer? I'm just trying to think. This is our money.
You're putting the lull after the sea lines are gone would be my major issue.
What's that?
You don't want the fish backing out if the sea lines are
probably. No. Well, we don't want to back out at all. Yeah. Not for a rough.
It's the same logic as...
Well, I guess, you know, this wouldn't matter too much, but it's stimulus money, and then if you let it delay past September 30th, and they don't know if they'll get any more money from mods or things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. The idea is to get it awarded now, and then...
we have to stick within our environmental laws, so I'm doing things right.
Yeah.
Whose money or what period is... what we don't want to end up in a situation where we have unanticipated take resulting from something that's not a, it's kind of hard to call this one a fish passage structure or device or anything that fits within that kind of a biological opinion.
Right. I know it's a betterment to
our
building.
Visitor facility, so.
Will this be open to the public during this time?
No.
Okay, because there are people that work there. That will be sitting in there as well.
Yeah. Fish counters.
Right. I mean, they'll be allowed there, but the public won't be allowed there.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I mean, it's not a sustained noise, or I don't even know if they'll really
bother
much. I know where they sit down there.
They're going to have to use wrenches to tighten the bolts.
Instead of impact hammers.
Well, can I say, I mean, I guess I'm almost, the vibration.
We wouldn't have a problem with that.
Okay.
But using impact wrenches and all that kind of stuff.
Just the handling of the steel is going to make noise, though.
The concrete will be placed before and when a work period is over.
They're checking on
if
that.
If they can
right
get
now.
That done, then we should be in good shape. And I'm not sure that it'd be that bad anyway because of the noise of concrete. Well, vibration.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Take out the weights, yeah. I don't know how loud that would be. You know, if it's.
Got a we're gas powered motor or electric motor.
It's not that loud.
But
right on the edge.
You do that at night.
They're right on the edge of the ladder.
I know.
And they're right on the edge.
I know.
So the vibrations would transmit through solid objects.
The concrete.
And those fish will hear that.
The question is how far back will they go?
How far will they drop out?
How long do you think it's going to take to get that part of it done? Get all the steel erected and all the. Are you talking a week period? Or?
Yeah, maybe like a week, something like that. I don't think the on-site time is that long as far as the steel erection. And
how long is the concrete placement? Those are good questions that maybe we should have that information. You know, what's the period? One, number one, is an estimate of when this is going to occur. Number two that we should have is how long it's going to occur. And the third point is how loud is it?
Okay.
You know, really. I mean, that's. I don't like any noise around ladders, especially in May. And
okay, even at night.
Bad. Yeah, even at night, because you've got fish holding in there and you can chase them back down the ladder. But if it's a pretty minor amount or if it's really a short period of time, that's a different response. It's
just, you might be able to make it for like a short window in June or something
right.
like that, a low period, and say, okay, well.
If this is for months, that's a problem. If it's for a few nights, the whole year, that's different. Okay. A lot less impact.
And you're preferring June.
Oh, I didn't say that.
He didn't.
Well, I'm just saying, if you've got a lot of fish in there and at night, and if it's easier to sell it by saying, hey, we're only going to be in there, five nights.
Okay.
During June or something.
Five nights in June, five nights in April. That, if it's early April or March, that's not so bad either.
Yeah.
So spring shut get started.
and the sea lions really start to pick up. June's better though from the sea lion standpoint.
I would say June.
Yeah.
From a sea lion standpoint, that means you'd have something sitting there half done for 2 months.
True. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that, I mean, June would be fine for yeah. for.
That's the erection out of part of it. Out of the sea lion.
As Patagas.
Yes, we're worried about the people walking around. Winter.
Summer.
Yeah. With a half-built structure.
Well, that's when you have your most visitors.
Right.
Well, school's not quite out yet.
Make your people
your
be poisoned.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
You can't get to it anyways.
Well, it sounds like we need more details as far as...
Are you waiting for a contractor to give you more information?
I met him today. Well, first we were trying to figure out a solution to be less intrusive to the interior of the building.
It sounds like you did.
And then today I met with our contractor, our 8A contractor, and I said, hey, can you get this concrete work done if we give you notice to proceed in mid-June? So he took that information away. Mid-January, I'm sorry. And then I guess I misinterpreted last time. I thought we could do the erection part of it after the in-water work period.
As long as it's quiet. Okay. Yeah, if it was quiet, that's not a problem.
I need the definition of quiet, I guess.
So. Yeah, and I need a definition of loud. I mean, how loud is this thing going to be?
Rock concert, or are we talking loud?
Yeah. people walking around on the deck is not a problem. If you're jackhammering or if you're
no jackhammering,
no. You know, well, but jackhammering or if you're pneumatic impact wrenching bolts closed, that's kind of the same thing. That's a very loud machine gun sound. Yeah. That would scare me. It'd probably scare a fish too.
How many nights? How many hours would it take?
Duration. If it's nights or, what's the length of duration of the work? If we're only talking about a few days, that's different than if you're talking about a few months. So,
or even a few weeks.
I have a couple things to get then, and then I'm running over my 15 minutes now. I thought I'd be quicker.
Yeah, I was aware of that.
I knew it.
When we don't want anything falling in the fish ladder.
That's so good.
Do we put a cover over it while they're doing this?
That'd be bad.
Yeah, well, cover over would be the best.
Netting. If you think something's going to fall in, netting would be
okay.
So here, your concern is to cut the light off.
Yeah, we don't want to cut the light off. But if it's a mesh,
if they're dropping nails or bolts, they're going to be tiny. Your mesh is going to
go right through.
That probably won't bother the fish.
And then Ben will have to get those out during the next in winter maintenance. That's not
problem.
And then
we just don't want the chunk of the roofing to fall in and plug up the
ground. Or drop too much metal in here, you're going to mess up the pit tanks. That's true. And are they galvanized?
Yeah, it's going to take.
If it's zinc, it would increase the.
They're hungry. We're going back to our first topic.
Him's going to kill somebody.
I'm getting hungry.
Okay.
What's
your
WDFW? Well, I can get it.
Okay.
So decibel level, duration of work, number of nights, few nights, probably going to be okay. Few months, not okay.
And a few weeks might not be okay.
Yeah, a few weeks. It also depends when. Like, if you think you can do it like the very beginning of March,
that makes a big difference, too, because there aren't many fish there. Yeah. Early April, there aren't many fish there. By mid-April, we have a lot of fish there, and May's out.
But you said June.
But then what? Yeah, the numbers drop in June, plus the effect of sea lions just drops off in June. So if fish do drop out, at least it's not death. It's waits.
So maybe if it's a 2-week thing, maybe one of those weeks in March and another week in June.
So 2 weeks at night, and I mean that's in.
Yeah. That's the problem. It all depends on severity what the run's doing at the time. We need to know when. Because if there aren't many fish, then the impact is minor and it's no big deal. If there's a lot of fish, then you work at night for 1 hour a night.
This is going to be one of our largest runs ever.
Yeah.
If you look at the jacks.
Well,
you
look at
the jacks. That's what
you said last year, too.
So we made a June swoon that you're happy with, the low end of the number. And we may see numbers we've never seen.
We could, if the jack counts. Oh,
so, so the June period to me is a concern because it may not, it may just not drop off to where you're comfortable.
Well, not for the sea lions, I guess, is really the issue.
More your concern?
Yeah. Okay. I think we can work at night. Numbers will drop off in June. It may not drop off.
They will, but they may be phenomenally high, low numbers.
Well, if we have 30,000 fish and, you know, passing the ladder in a day, that's an issue. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be everywhere in the ladder.
That's an issue.
2-5
March is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the big issue.
Dave's question.
March is not going to be, I don't think they can get it fabricated in time.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I was hearing before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think June is.
Dave's up.
I guess you're going to ask questions on time it takes to do certain things. I guess from my perspective, it would be nice to know. The critical thing is getting the concrete done and then getting the steel frame up. Is that correct?
Yeah.
After that's up, we're not too concerned about noise things. There's nothing that's going to.
Well, they'll be already doing. I'm getting the impression there's always a noise issue.
There's always.
Well, there's also.
But then they're putting a roof on there. There's this kind of steel roof, and then.
So I guess the major thing, though, is the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be nice to know how much time is it going to take to complete the project after the frame is in place?
Mm-hmm.
And can you have a contract that includes the construction of the frame and the other parts with some flexibility if we have some time sensitive or, you know, some season sensitive periods where we want them to lay off?
Yeah, good.
Because it was kind of hard to tell. It just says construction finished in September 2010.
Well,
I mean, are they working? Yeah.
Yeah.
But right. I mean, are they going to need to work? I mean, from a business standpoint, sure. They want to start on day one and finish as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have any flexibility?
Well, I think we would probably have to give them in the contracts that flexibility. I mean, they want to schedule things too.
Right. And there might be more costs for mobilization and demobilization.
Yeah.
I can tell them.
That's the trade-off.
I'd like to know. I guess we have to tell them, ideally tell them now when we want.
Right.
You have to, you've got 2-week window at night in June to do all the erection.
So, Mark, when's your next date as far as what date are you targeting to get things out to the contractors? Is it?
We're going to give him a package in the next couple of weeks to start looking at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we're going to have information updated and emailed out to FFOM.
Yeah.
We can't wait till next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you a decimal level that fish didn't.
Is August a better time frame or September?
August is
good.
Yeah.
Okay. More fish coming in.
Yeah, July is better.
Fall snook then.
July.
August is our highest passage time.
Okay.
Steelhead.
So we're going to want to do this. If we do it out in the after the April time frame, we're going to want to do it in June.
Okay.
That's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't make this go any quicker. This was ARA money, and it just came in and. In fact, when I got it, they said their deadline that they, I don't know who picked the date, was March. And I said, there's no way we can to get it the money obligated. And I said, wow, there's an in water work period.
Yeah.
So I tried to speed things up. And
yeah,
I
normally things like this would roll over to another year.
Right. And they normally would, but this is
I don't
different.
Understand.
Okay, so if you can update this and email it to Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tammy can email it out to the group, and at that point we'll decide whether we can just handle things over email or if we need to have a special FPOM call to wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm getting a real handle on what noise, what capabilities
I'm
are.
I'm thinking I could almost eliminate pneumatic tools, and I don't think it would. There's
that could make a big difference. Then just
the concrete. We're gonna have a crane out there lifting these things.
Yeah, it's like that kind of problems I'm worried about.
As long as they don't scrape it across all
that
the
kind of
okay.
Or dump it in the ladder.
Yeah.
Or dumping in the ladder.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. 30 minutes, so we're back here at 1:20.
15
minutes to go buy a lunch and bring it back.
Yeah. Bring it here.
Otherwise, we're going to be here all night.
We'll meet here.
We're going to try to get out of here.
Are we going to try to get into the chat forms?
Yes.
Get into what?
Change corners.
It's how much we're going to.
Yeah, that's. I mean, we've got some that we're ready to move on.
Some of them might be.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't have a chance to go through all of them. So.
No.
I just read the ones that are this
There's one.
I don't know.
Well, it does to a degree, but what can happen is you can't have
you have more items on the agenda.
Exceed the self standard.
So, you can't see it.
Oh. I mean, we don't want that either. Okay. So,
all right, I was just making sure I don't. I was thinking of another fabulous talk, and I was thinking about boiling my